Gabe's a fat ass. You need to stop playing around with all the clowns and the wanksters. Good girls gotta get down with the gangsters. Go ahead, girl, put some back and some neck up on it. While I stand up in the background and check up on it. Hello and welcome to Fat Ass Cast. This is episode 90. Shit. See what you do, Al?
Sorry, no.
This is the TryGames.net podcast. Actually, not the Fat Ass Cast. We are here talking about fat asses. Who use We Fit, but aren't actually fat.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they're 2 years old and 1 foot eight.
1 foot eight?
Yeah, 2 years can use We Fit now.
Yeah. So, I'm your host, Mr. Chupon / Austin. We are here with the return of the Tony Mac. Hello, Tony. Holy shit. We're here with Alfredo.
Conan.
And Slunks. Hello.
Slunks.
Nah.
Hello. Slunks. He's somewhere over there. He's probably letting loose a brown one.
That's Ethan's job.
Yeah, but right? Ethan's useless Ethan's now, job. So it's up to him to
Ethan's
set the Slunks to fill out the
in
slack.
The big
in the bulb.
Deuce lair of the sky.
And I'm still eating a Jolly Rancher. I've got like a lifetime supply of these things now. Actually, no, I only have two more left. So after this podcast, they're all going to be gone. So, yes. But let's see. Tony has been absent from our hearts and minds and brains, so we will start off with him. What have you been playing?
Final Fantasy. No, not Jesus. Why did I keep on saying fucking shut up? Fantasy Star 3 and 4.
Ah.
And
generations suck.
Well, it doesn't really suck now that I know exactly why it's so different than all the other games.
Oh.
And that's because it was just it was formatted badly as far as battles are concerned.
It was.
It was really, really badly done. Like, for instance, if you wanted to, like, say, pick an individual person, you got to go up to, like, say, the battle icon, the one-time battle icon, and then you have to select a character. And then after you select the character, you got to select which enemy you want to go to. Now, for some reason, left, you know, pressing left to go to, like, an enemy on the left side is right. Up is right. Down is right. Right is right. There's no left.
What?
You can't go. You can't go up. You could. Actually, you could go up, but you can't go left. No left. No left. What's up
I'm
with that?
I'm a left turn making fool.
It's like Zoolander. The game is like Zoolander.
Yeah.
He couldn't turn left to save his life.
I can't turn left.
Really, really good.
I bet you on the last boss you could turn left.
Martial arts. Yeah, and there's like other things that are happening with this game that suck too. Like my biggest gripe with the series is that anything that you buy, you have to assume it's better than what you have because it doesn't show you the stats before you buy it.
Right, right, yeah.
Okay, so you just have to assume that Lycan armor is better than your silver armor or your, steel armor, or shit like that. And if it's not, you just wasted your money and reload game, so shit like that. There's only two save spots, so, you got to play out each generation, I guess, on two saves, and if you make a mistake, you're fucked. That's it. I mean, like, there's things going on with this game, especially that even after you clear a generation and you talk to some townspeople, they're talking about shit that supposedly happened in the last generation. Now, how the fuck did they stay in, time stasis that long? That they have no new conversations. So it's like, those are my little gripes with Fantasy Star.
I was driving my Model T car yesterday down the road and the stock market crashed. And I saw
and
somebody fall out the window.
I'm serious. These people are telling me, go into Castle Mystoke and get Leia's pendant. And I'm like, I got Leia's pendant. Last generation, you motherfuckers.
Like 30 years ago, I got Leia's pendant.
Exactly.
Where the fuck were you?
Why didn't you die yet, The fuck?
It's going to be a long time before I accept Missouri as a state.
So, like, you know, little shit like that. And if you get lost, there's very little to help you.
Oh, yeah.
Very little. Very little. And you get lost often.
Oh, yeah.
Okay?
They don't even tell you where the next place to go is sometimes.
Exactly. No, they give you like, if you talk to, like, the king or whatever or certain townspeople, they give you a hint of where you should go. Like, they'll tell you got to go to Dahlia to talk to
Loom.
But
they don't tell you in what general direction it is.
Yeah, where's Dahlia? What the fuck is Dahlia? Can I just make up Dahlia right now? Can I just go there, please? And give me a teleport. Do something.
Yeah, and then you wind up, like, going to some place. You're like, oh, maybe that's Dahlia. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
And then it'd be like, Thompson.
I ended up somewhere where I got my ass kicked. There were, like, goats and shit.
Exactly.
And they fucking kicked my ass. No, so literally, they were goats. And they kicked my ass. Literally, they were fucking goats. And I got my ass kicked. Yeah, obviously, I'm in the last generation. I decided to do it this way. I decided to do Reese is the starting character. Mm-hmm. I decided to marry the other girl who wasn't the Leyen, you know, the one with the brown hair.
Right.
So I got a son with no magic power, and that mission sucked because we kept on getting our collective asses kicked, okay, up until we got people that had magic, okay? And then I decided to pick Leia, and so we had two twins. Two ugly fucking twins from the... No, I'm sorry. Sorry. Two Leyen twins. And that's the mission I'm playing now. And I'm completely lost. I was lost up until I finally found Dahlia. I realized that it was in a town that I totally forgot about. Even though it was at the end of the last mission. It's just been a while since I played it. I was like, where am I going? Mm-hmm. Where am I going? Goat! 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 Fucking goat kicking my ass! Oh my god. So that's what I've been... Shut up! That's what I've been playing. I will relinquish it to whoever.
Your foot is a mountain goat. How many things do you have?
How many things do I have?
That you've been playing.
A few. I've been playing Conan mostly.
Jolly Rancher. Okay, because all I've been doing is playing Portal of Ruin, so a Portrait of Ruin. So if you'd like me to go first, I won't.
Oh, no, I will. You go last, man. You're the host.
Fine, go ahead.
So, yeah, I've been playing Conan a lot. I'm still raising hell with my Dark Templar. And I have now a nice serving of cocktail weenies from the party, just freshly made.
Thief!
Guys? Oh, okay. Just making sure you guys heard that. And let's see.
Abelin!
Oh, goodness. So, yeah. I'm level 18 now. And I got Rob into the game. So, he's playing an assassin, of course, because his thieving ass always wants to play some kind of hide and sneak behind you and start tearing you up from behind kind of assassin kind of guy. He's level 13, so we've been, like, playing here and there together, and it's cool, because, like, your first 20 levels, you can do a mix of multiplayer, where you're in the massive multiplayer world, and single player, where we play at nighttime, and there's no other characters, just in your own instance, and you do a whole bunch of things that are tailored to your level.
Yeah, I've heard about this separation of the modes, so, and also, is it true that... when you first start out, it's very easy to gain... not easy, but quick to gain levels?
Oh, yeah. You can be level 5 in 10 minutes. Something like that.
So that, what does that usually take in something like... In any other MMO, how quickly do you get to that same...
Well, usually, like, for example, I'll use WoW. In World of Warcraft, you can get to level 10 in about an hour or two. And it's because there's a lot of running around to do. With Conan, it's like, you see the girl,
Bonan.
And you kill this guy, and after you kill the guy, you're practically level 2, because you kill like 3 or 4 people before you get to him, and then you kill the guy, you're level 2. Then you turn in a quest, and then you get like half a level from that. Then you gotta go kill some more people to get to the next point, by that time you're level 3. And then you like kill the slave master, and by that time you're level 5 or 4. Depending on how many people you killed on the way. So the amount of required experience per level is real quick. Actually, no. You kill the slave master, you're level 4, then you gotta kill somebody else. And then by that time, you're level 5. And by the time you get to the main city, you're already, like, level 5, level 6.
So, answer me this, and I think I may have misheard other people talking when they talked about it, but you can only gain experience in the in the nighttime thing? Not only
not
game,
true.
But, like, okay, so, because I heard something about, like, they were talking about how, what was it exactly, like, they didn't want to be gaining levels outside of the main questing experience in the respect that they didn't want to spend extra time to gain their levels when they wanted to do it kind of like in the game itself. So is that the case at all? Or maybe I'm mixing it up with some other game or something, but that's what it sounded like. Like, for example, like gaining levels during the night is much faster than gaining levels during the day. Anything like that?
That is true.
Okay, okay.
Because of the fact that when you turn in quests, you get a lot of XP.
Okay, yeah.
I think you get substantially less experience when you turn in a quest during the day, but there's a lot more quests during the day.
And more people to spread around the XP with.
Yeah, and it also takes longer because if you go somewhere and eat the whole thing.
What the fuck is going on over there?
Death pornographic.
No, Evelyn took a half of a cocktail frank and left me with the other half. Like,
that's impossible.
No, she actually bit off half of the freaking small thing already.
What is she? Right, 95 anyway. Pounds now? What's she going for, supermodel status?
I don't know. But anyhow, the nighttime leveling is like, I do a nice little balance of it. Like, I'll get a couple of quests during the day, and I'll do some of them, and I'll save them for when I play with Rob. But I'm 18 already, so basically I have 2 more levels to be in this place before it becomes worthless to me.
Yeah.
And I really want to finish the nighttime quest because it's actually specific to the class that I have. So if I was to, you know, run another character, the nighttime quest would be completely different. So I think that's pretty cool. So I want to finish that to see what it's like for the Dark Templar. And now I got all these abilities and whatnot that help me be a tank, which is really cool. So I get to run up into all the people and they start fighting and all the attention is on me and, like,
run
fucking
up
them
in
up
your
and stealing
ground,
life shit. So that's that. I don't think I played World of Warcraft at all this week. Because, I'm just dipping my feet into it. What the fuck? I turned off my stupid thing. Wait. I turned off my screensaver and then it decides to come back on. Now it's 1 minute. That's why.
It's okay. Windows Vista.
Let me turn it on none. That's why.
That's not.
For some reason, I put on 0 minutes thinking it was going to turn it off. I didn't play Warcraft because I've just been playing Conan. And
Rage of
really
Bonan.
Had much time. Rage of Bonan.
Rage of Bonan.
I played some Ninja Gaiden Black. I finished Chapter 5 and I was talking about that at work. Because we were just talking about Ninja Gaiden 2 and I was thinking, well, if I could finish 2 chapters a night, then I could beat the game. But it took me like an hour and a half or something to beat Chapter 5. And when I actually beat Chapter 5, the time was 29 minutes. So I'm like, that's like a 10-minute level. It took me 29 minutes to beat it. So that's not good.
In an hour of real time?
No, an hour and a half in real time.
Oh.
Yeah, of like getting mad at the stupid black spider ninjas throwing incendiary shrieking blow up on me.
Oh,
like,
that
die.
Shit is a fucking pain in the crock.
Yeah, but I mean, it's bad because like in level 5, after you cross the drawbridge to go into the other town, you fight 3 ninjas. And at the save point, you fight 3 ninjas. So every time you reload the game, when you die, you gotta fight those same 3 ninjas.
Yep.
Then after that, you run around to the side and you get into this arena area where you fight like 4 soldiers. They're a piece of cake. Then you leave the area and there's 4 of those ninjas. After those 4 ninjas, there's another 3 around the corner. And after you survive that, then there's some soldiers and you gotta fight the big demon. And then after the big demon, you gotta fight the boss. And there's only 1 save point.
Jesus.
I was like, come on. So, I'm having fun with that game. Even though I'm cursing and trying to not to throw my controller while it's wired up to my Xbox charging.
Wait, so... So you beat that level. Now you're at the gate. Now you're gonna have to go into the monastery.
Yeah, and I haven't played since. That was like Tuesday.
And the save point that you dropped off at is on this little like corner with the guy like in the stairwell or something.
You mean the beginning of chapter 6?
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't even load chapter 6. As soon as I saved the game, I'm like, all right.
Well, but I mean, where did you save?
At the end of chapter 5.
But I mean, like, what does it look like? What does that save area look like? Because I forgot.
Man, I don't know. I started the level and went to the dragon and turned the shit off.
Cause,
I don't know what the level looks like.
Because I remember when I started the monastery level, like, all those ninjas that you were talking about, like, you have to find them right again, right at the beginning. Right as soon as you exit the save room, they're sitting there waiting for you.
God damn it. All right. Well, I'll take a look at it and I'll curse a little bit more. Other than that, I just been playing. Like, I actually played Guitar Hero 3 for a little bit this morning. I gold 5-star. I got a full combo on a full completion. Whatever you call it, FC.
FC.
On Radio Song, finally, after all this time.
Oh, the French super bus bitches?
Yeah. Because for some reason, I couldn't ever, like, get the last part.
Right.
And then I played it this morning. I got the last part, but then I, like, missed two notes in the beginning. And I'm like, okay, let me do it again. So I did it again, and I got it perfect. I'm like, what the hell? And then I played Almost Easy because, I don't know, for some odd reason, I wake up in the morning and I think of a song. And when I think of that song, I either listen to it on my Zoom or if I can play it on some kind of video game medium, I'll play that.
Right.
It's weird.
Right.
And other than that, I'm playing Phantom Hourglass on the DS.
How much more do you have to go with that?
I have one more precious metal to get, and then I have to forge the sword that will beat the last boss. And then beat the last boss. So I don't know. It probably isn't that much, but at the rate that I play it, it's probably a lot.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to end the call for now for a few seconds to see if I can get my volume back up.
Okay.
This is really fucking up. I can't stand this.
I'm going to go eat this cocktail, Frank, right here. It's going to be good.
All right, 5 seconds.
All right.
All right, everyone here again? Okay. okay. Oh, I remember what I wanted to ask you. Okay, we're back in. So what was... Just to go back to Rage of Bonan for a second, what was the motivation to go out and play that as opposed to, let's say, Tabula Rasa or Vanguard when it came out and people didn't know how bad it was?
I wasn't interested in Tabula Rasa or Vanguard. That's primarily the reason. Like, when
right, that's,
guys in my job...
That is the question. Like, why weren't you interested in them?
Oh, they just...
I shall answer it with the same question.
I'll answer it this way.
Okay.
I will answer it by talking about why I'm interested in Age of Conan. Because that's really the only way that I can describe how disinterested I was in the other games. Age of Conan, when it was in early, like, you know, they were working on it, and it was an alpha or something like that. This guy at my job was talking about it, and I was like, ah, whatever. You know, it's Conan. And he's like talking about all these things that you could do in the game. And I'm like, whatever. I'm not even listening to him, right? And then it finally comes out, like, you know, 2 weeks ago. And the guys at my job, like the guy who was telling me about it before, he doesn't work in Long Island anymore. He works at the Connecticut office, so I haven't even spoken to him. But the guys who I normally work with, who, like, I play World of Warcraft with, they came to me talking about, oh, man, look at the graphics. The graphics are awesome. The girls running around, like, with titties and stuff. And I was like, yeah, I know there's titties in the game. That doesn't really impress me too much. But, yeah, cool. Yeah, there's titties in the game. Why not? And it's like, yeah, you could be, like, cutting people's heads off. I was like, really? And, you know, I started getting a little interested in it. And then they said that... you know, in the beginning, there's a combination of the single player and the multiplayer. And I said, really? That's pretty cool. It's pretty interesting. And then they said the combat system is more real time. It's not like you stand there and your timer goes up and then you attack.
Right, you're able to like dodge and shit and like attack their left and right in their front, right?
Right. The dodging it leaves a little bit to be desired, but maybe I just haven't tapped into the potential of it, or maybe I'm not even supposed to be dodging because I have a shield. But you can block to actively block, and you also always have a chance to block and parry, but you can actively block attacks by pressing a key on the keyboard, other than attacking up left, up right, and forward, or later on you can get down, like slashing down left and down right, or something like that. When I heard about that, I was like, wow, I really want to try out the gameplay of this, because, of course, the primary gameplay is battle. You just run around and kill people most of the time, other than picking up shit and returning shit and whatnot. And then they said, you know, after level 20, the game opens up, it becomes so much better. And I'm like, well, how does it become better? I'd like to know what this better means. No one could really put it into words. And then when I actually got the game, I was reading the book. I'm looking at the classes, and I'm like, wow, this is really diverse. It's not like, okay, well, I got to pick a human, and I can only be a healer or a tank or some kind of damage. It's like they're all human classes, but they're of different races. And those different races only have certain abilities, like Sumerians. They're the ones that came from the line of Conan, like Conan's a Sumerian.
United Colors of Hyboria.
Something like that. What the hell is United Colors of Hyboria?
United Colors of Benetton.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was something that you got from somewhere, but you actually just made that up, didn't you?
Yes, like the lopsided titties.
Oh my goodness, just like the lopsided titties. So, Sumerians are like, you know, they're the barbarian. Like, they pride themselves on physical strength and stuff. So you won't see any Sumerians as
like the Spartans.
Healers or mages.
Spartans.
Yeah, like Spartans. And so
that movie
basically
sucked,
you're
by
all
the way.
Sorry. Meet the Spartans. I would have told you that, like,
no, not Meet the Spartans. Just 300. Yeah.
You know what? Fuck you, man. That movie was hot.
That movie blew, and you knew it.
Why did blow? You just not like. You just don't like fun, right?
What are you talking about?
You just don't like
that
fun,
movie
right?
Was fun.
What? Are you fucking kidding me?
Nope.
Are you a movie critic?
Yeah.
That's why.
Well, you didn't like Ray either, so go ahead.
I didn't like what? Right. No, I didn't like Ray for the right reasons. And I want you to blow
me. Oh, for the right reasons. Ooh, I'm Tony. I have the right reasons. Go ahead, Al.
That's right.
All right. So, if you play as, like, the Stygians, they're the ones that are all smart and shit, apparently. And they have, like, all the mages and the priests and stuff like that. And then there's the Aquilonians, who are, like, a mix of the two. They have, you know, warriors as well as the intelligentsia, or whatever the fuck you want to call it, and they have a mix of the two races that you can choose. Now, they also have servers where you can have culture PvP. So basically, if you're an Aquilonian, you can only hang out with Aquilonians, or else you're gonna get killed.
That's racist.
So, well, culture PvP is
that's
racist.
That's racismo.
So that was pretty cool, even though PvP in and of itself in this game is really, like, not good, because you just go in an area and you just get your head cut off by somebody 10 levels higher than you. But what really pulled me into the game was the fact that later on you can get mounts that you can fight on. And this was something I always wanted in Warcraft, where you get on a horse and you actually fight on a horse. You have an advantage because you're on a goddamn fucking horse, as opposed to having to get off your horse to fight. Mm-hmm. And then you get mammoths that can crush buildings and, like, step on players and stuff. And you get rhinos that can also attack buildings and things like that. So I'm looking forward to that part of the game, as well as being in, like, a guild and having the city living just, like, in your own house out in the outskirts of whatever town or whatever. And then other people from other guilds come and, like, try and destroy your fortifications and stuff. So it's, like, guild versus guild PvP and whatnot. That kind of stuff is what really pulled me into the game. That, you know, the prospect of it actually working. Because there, you know, like, I played Star Wars Galaxies. And yeah, you can have your own house in that game, but the game sucks.
You just hate the Star Wars. Blah, blah. You've made, like, a billion fans cry, which is funny. Yep. You should do it again.
No, I don't think Star Wars the Galaxies has a billion fans.
I just meant Star Wars in general.
Yeah, Star Wars fans, they know what to like and what not to like. They know not to like Star Wars Galaxies. Fucking piece of shit, Sony online entertainment game. Bullshit, crap ass. Everybody's a Jedi or a bounty hunter now. Alright, Austin, what you been playing?
You sound very happy about that.
Fucking hate that game. Waste of money. I still have the fucking disc. I wish I could burn them, but then, you know.
Why don't you toss it in the microwave?
No, because they're actually games.
So? It's a game you hate.
Yeah, but I'm not going to put it in a microwave. And besides, my microwave is broken right now.
So then break it further.
It doesn't turn on anymore.
So then plug it in.
It doesn't turn on anymore. What you been playing?
The microwave. No. Plug it in and turn it on. Put some water in it. That'll get it going.
Plug it in.
Plug it in! Oh, God. The only thing I've been playing is Portrait of Ruin for the Nintendo DS. For anyone who doesn't know, that's the latest Castlevania. Oh, I'm out of Jolly Ranchers. That's the latest Castlevania game for the DS. Yeah. And you beat it, like, a decade ago, as I recall, right, Al?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, it actually manages to be different enough, thank God, because whoever's played the previous, I don't know, five Castlevanias or six that weren't on the PlayStation 2?
No, I don't think it was six. It was three on Game Boy Advance and one on DS.
And then one on PlayStation.
Oh, I thought you were talking about, you weren't talking about the PS2 ones.
Right.
I thought you were talking about anything that wasn't on PlayStation.
No, anything on PlayStation 2. That's how come I put the 2 at the end.
Okay.
But basically, any 2D Castlevania within the past, like, 27,000 years.
Oh, those games, okay.
Yes, that's why I said Symphony and those three on GBA and Dawn of Sorrow. They're all the Metroidvania type things where, you know, it's like Metroid where you just explore this big castle and you find items to expand the castle. And that's all well and good. But it's been almost the same for the last, you know, four or five games. And Dawn of Sorrow was the best one of those, but, you know, it was by that time it was getting a little old. So Portrait of Ruin basically says, okay, well, the castle itself is going to be a little smaller. Instead, we're going to focus on these paintings that you can jump into and go into these different worlds. So it's kind of like, imagine Mario 64, except instead 2D. Of... Huh?
Except 2D.
Right, yeah, except 2D. The concept is instead of like, excuse me.
Woo, bless you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Mayor?
But instead of a small castle and big worlds, it's a big castle and medium-sized worlds.
Okay.
Like, I mean, the worlds themselves take, what would you say, Al? Maybe 10 minutes to 15 minutes per painting?
Except for some of the harder ones, which I would say like 25 to 30.
Okay.
But like, they have some really fucked up paintings, like the one with the, that was in the urban environment.
I haven't been there yet.
It's like all rotated and shit. It's all fucked up.
Oh, that one. Oh, yeah. It's like the enemies are climbing up the walls and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I did that one. Yeah. That one I did.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say anything. Keep going.
Yeah, because I might not have played far enough.
Well, no, it's just that, no, I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, don't say anything.
I went to you finish.
Yeah. But it's, I like it because it goes away from the whole, like, well, you're in this one castle and that's it. And they refrain from recycling every little bit of castle space from the previous Castlevanias. It's like, oh, here's the underground cavern again. Oh, here's the same clock tower that looks exactly the same again. Mm-hmm. Oh, here's the same thing over and over. You know, so it refrains from that, thankfully. But I think sometimes some of the painting levels feel a little bit fillerish. Like that there's a whole mess of straight rooms that really don't do anything or it's like some of the rooms are really like not poorly designed but lazily designed, and it's just like it doesn't feel as tight overall as like the castle usually is.
There's some empty corner rooms. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah, I was gonna say is like, do you get a skill to like break through walls or anything? And I don't know, you know.
There's some walls that are breakable, but a lot of the rooms, they just, like, are empty.
Right.
Like, did you not have any time to put anything in there?
Right, exactly. So, they had this two-character system where you can use a second, you can use your partner to like help you push blocks, or there's this one cool thing where you're on a pair of motorbikes. With why motorbikes appear in like 1945? That works because then yeah. So you're on a pair of motorbikes and you basically have to ride down a corridor and then like make sure your characters can get knocked off. So you have to switch back and forth between them to make them jump or duck over and under obstacles and all that stuff. Things like that. It's pretty cool. I find that your partner, though, who is supposed to be like a magician, is almost useless. Not useless in the fact that it's like if you use her, you'll die in 2 seconds, but useless in the fact that it's like there's no reason that you really need to ever use her. And I don't know if that holds true throughout the rest of the game, but like for the first 4 hours, I've been mainly using the guy who uses the whips.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only switched to her when I needed to use her for like teamwork things. That's it. I've never fought with her. I never felt the need to.
There's some things that she's good at that and you'll definitely see. There's one part of the game where if you use the guy, you're going to die.
Oh. Huh, interesting. Okay. Well, I hope I come across so soon, because she's really useless right now.
What level are you in right now?
I'm 4 hours in. I just, I beat the, I'm trying to think. I think I just beat the boss that spews water out at you.
Mm-hmm.
That's in, like, the forest place.
Oh, okay. Wait, I think. In the mansion?
Yeah. And I feel like I started somewhere else too, but I can't remember.
Did you get into the pyramid yet?
Yes, I beat that.
You beat the pyramid?
Yeah.
Then you should know what I'm talking about with the boss.
Was the boss? What was the boss again? Refresh my memory.
Some bitch.
Oh, one of the daughters.
No, not one of her daughters. It's just like some pyramid queen bitch.
Pyramid queen bitch.
I forget what her name is, and I'm not going. I don't want to spoil it for you. If you, maybe it's another one. In that game.
Are there two pyramids?
Yeah, kinda.
Okay, that's why then, because I went to the first one.
It could be the second one, but I'm pretty sure it was the first one.
I still have to explore some of the first one, because I did beat it. I don't know. I beat it, and you said some queen bitch?
Yeah, just some girl that you have to fight.
Is she normal sized, or is she, like, statue sized?
She's normal sized.
And what are her, is that the one that, like, that throws hearts at you?
Yes.
I beat her without switching. I kicked her ass.
You do know that if you have the guy and you touch one of the hearts, she mind controls you.
Yeah, but I dodge the hearts.
Okay, well, if you use the girl, you can run through the hearts.
I can run through your face. No, I always just dodged it. Like,
ew. It's much easier to do with the girl.
I guess it is. I just didn't really have that much of a problem. Mm-hmm. Like, I died once because I didn't know what her attacks were, and then like, oh, okay, now I can go back and just, you know, whatever. I had more trouble with the Legion. Really? I always have trouble with Legion bosses. Just cause,
I used the girl against the Legion, too. I just cast mad spells, and they died.
Oh. What was bugging me was the stupid, like, toxic spray that it farts out.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Damn, this is like belch cast.
Yeah, and cough cast. But, yeah, I've been really just playing that until I, you know, decide to go out and get Ace Attorney, because I'm kind of in that mode now. Mm-hmm. So that's all I really been playing, and that's it. Blah 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 blah. Move on to the news. We're on to the news. We got some stuff to talk about. Let's see what the first one is. We got people
killing people and people playing games and first reactor. This is with a Square Enix.
You can't understand what the hell I'm saying. Okay, so I call this one Destroy a Dream with the Mainstream. Basically, Square Enix is pissed that they're not making money because they're actually bothering to make some games that are original, like The World Ends With You. But let's see. This is from the Wired blog, Game Life. This is by Chris Kohler. Let's see. This is what he says. Is Square Enix going to seal up any creativity leaks? Question mark. Kotaku reports that several, quote, company insiders, end quote, have said that the company president, Yoichi Wada, has been on a tear recently following the company's disappointing 2007 financial results, which saw a massive drop-off in U.S. sales of its games. Quote, word has it that a fierce meeting was held over a month ago where the Square Enix head honcho threatened to start axing employees if they didn't, and we're paraphrasing, stop making games that only they wanted to play. Kotaku writes. In other words, if you like some of Square Enix's more inventive games like The World Ends With You, even those days might be over. Well, that's shit.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, call to arms for any independent developers. I guess this is just what happens when big money enters the picture.
Oh, yeah, because that's what he's thinking about. How come we're not making money?
Yeah, I see.
Where's my money, bitch? Where's my money? That's my money. Don't try to play me. This is how you do me, man.
But
you know what are you going to do? That's the nature of the business. I mean,
yeah.
if the independent ideas do not sell, then why should they hold on to independent ideas? Let's go to the shit that works. Kingdom Hearts 3.
I'm just trying to, you know, think about how the other industries do this. It's like music and movies. I mean, they have their own venues for more independent venues.
Mm-hmm.
I just used that word twice in a sentence. That was stupid.
Oh, so mm-hmm. you want a Sundance for game developers?
There is, but what I'm saying is in the marketplace. That there's an outlet for them to make sure that and I'm sure there is. There's the PC space, you know. There's WiiWare. What I just fear is that these guys, they like to make games, they like to make these certain types of games that, you know, maybe they don't sell, but they're like, you know, they're unique and they're like Chris just said about The World Ends With You, they're inventive. But in order to fulfill that their vision, they need the money that Square Enix has.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes independent developers, you know, don't have enough money to make their idea come true, and so they end up doing. What is it that we were playing? Defend Your Castle, you know, which by all rights is fun in certain settings, but it's nothing like The World Ends With You, for example. I'm just giving examples.
It's just a time waster.
Yeah,
as
I'm giving
to
examples.
A full-fledged game. Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, how do they go and start making money? And it's what's especially sad about it is that The World Ends With You was a DS game, and the DS is, you know. One of the most prominent systems out there.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's not a Pokemon, so it's not going to get that kind of burn. Mm-hmm. You know, I haven't even bought it yet, only because I have a huge backlog. But now I feel bad, and I think I'm going to go out and get it.
Well, I haven't bought it. It's fucking $40.
That's the other thing. That, you know what? That he should take a President Wada should take a look at that and see why Square Enix has this stupid the people on 1UP call it the Square Enix Premium. Okay,
it is because they're only games that do that.
Like, come on, you know, he's wondering why they don't sell. Well, maybe because it's a little bit too expensive, you know. But you know, when Nintendo already puts a premium on their titles and it's not even $40, I don't even know why they do that, but, you know, it's $35. You know, that's already kind of pushing it. I don't
buy those either.
I mean, they should take a look at that, basically. That's my thing. I mean, he should look at himself for a little while. And maybe he's not responsible for the pricing. Maybe it's not him. You know, somebody up there, though, has got to kind of pipe up. Somebody from the design team should stick up for themselves and say, hey, look, motherfucker, somebody is trying to sell this off for $40, and we're trying to give it to as many people as possible. That's what you want, okay? So why don't you look into maybe reducing the price of that game? Oh, no, we cannot because we Square Enix. Oh, fuck that, you know?
How about you make games that other people want to play?
Yeah.
Or you get fired. That's it.
It's sad, and it, you know, and they talk about something similar. Sean Elliott from the Games for Windows podcast is really big on this rift between, like, you know, the reviewing styles of certain publications, and it's like it starts to become this thing where, and this is what I took away from it. This is not what he was talking about, but this is how I interpret it for myself. Like, the way you start reviewing games is, can everybody enjoy it? Is it, you know, is it? Does it hit all the bullet points, and can everybody have a good time? Will it satisfy most people? And I'm like, that's not how I want to review stuff, because it's not always about that. You know, some certain things are meant for a niche, and they, you know, what they do is fun and they do it really well. It's not necessarily accessible. And this is a different problem from the whole, well, it does what it's supposed to do really well. I think it's a different problem, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because I don't like that argument. I don't like it does what it's supposed to do really well. Like, niche things are good at what they do, but what they do is very appealing to a certain subsection of people. It's valid. It's a valid method of designing things. It's just not for everyone, you know. And you know, I don't know. Like, it's just a disturbing trend that I see when people are like, "Oh, you can't." Not everyone. It's like kind of the same argument that I've had with people when we're discussing, like, for music, more specifically hip hop. Like, everyone is talking about, "Oh, this artist and that artist is the best because they were able to cross over and, you know, cross lines, and everybody listens to them, even white people listen to them." I'm just like, well, first of all, never mind the racial implications behind that. Mm-hmm. But it's like, it's not always about that, you know. It's just because you're Puff Daddy and everybody listens to you doesn't mean that you're that good.
That's right.
You especially didn't invent the remix, goddammit. I did. No. But, yeah, I don't know. Any other thoughts on this, or should we move on to other
trends?
No,
I think you killed it with Puff Daddy.
I said my piece on the $40.
Puff Daddy does kill many things.
Well played.
Including including ears.
Including clothes.
Clothes?
Yeah.
It's Sean John.
But other disturbing trends. Phil Harrison talks about the end of single player.
Right. Whatever.
So, and I titled this in my blog, not on my blog, in the bucket, as Raph Koster's Not Alone, because I don't know if anybody remembers, Raph Koster was one of the bigwigs at Sony Online Entertainment. And he was talking about the evolution of games and single versus multiplayer, and he was saying, like, you know, single player games, they're an aberration. They should not exist. People don't like to play. People don't like to play alone. And eventually, they're just going to die and go away because they're useless or some drivel like that. Wow. And I'm like, bullshit. No. So let's see what Phil Harrison says here. Let's see if it's anything different or if he has different insight onto this. So this is written by Brian Ashcraft from Kotaku. It says, "Remember when Infogrames." Remember when Atari exec Phil Harrison said the company wouldn't be making another big-budget single-player game? Sure you do. Here, Harrison explains a bit better what he was getting at. Quote, "I think the single-player, disconnected console game is probably in its dotage. Now, that doesn't mean that those games aren't relevant going forwards, but they will be enhanced by community features being embedded in them, or downloadable content becoming an inherent and part of the experience, or some kind of user-generated content will be part of the experience. All of the things we see in the other games, the things that we can point to in compelling games," end quote. Fair enough. Speaking of single player, has Phil Harrison made an easy transition to Infogrames from Sony? This is just an aside. "Since Harrison, I've been here 2 months, and I think I'm making a whole new group of friends. It's like changing schools when you're a kid." So, okay, it's good to hear that he's happy. He still kind of looks like a penis, but, you know, he's cool. Mm-hmm. And I can respect this more, what he's saying here. I mean, with everything being connected, yeah, I do agree that there's going to be an emphasis on, yes, I have a single-player game. I mean, achievements are already the sign of that. Right. Achievements are saying, I'm playing this single-player game, but as you can log on to Xbox Live and you can see that I'm playing this, and then you can get jealous at the fact that I beat this game 150%, getting those hidden 50%, and you didn't do it because I have the achievement for it, you know? Mm-hmm. So that already there's that community thing. I still take a little bit of issue, not heavily, but just wondering, you know, when you talk about something like, and I'm just, you know, pull an example, Dragon Quest. No, because they're trying to go online. A Final Fantasy, okay? Not that I don't think that people couldn't innovate on top of it to make it a network-style game or whatnot. And I'm not talking about MMOs here. Mm-hmm. I'm just talking about embedded community stuff in here. Like, how relevant is that to the classic single-player RPG experience? You know, how relevant is saying, oh, you know, I got the achievement for logging 50 hours in there? How
loser?
How much of an interest does it?
How much of an interest?
Yeah. Oh man!
How much of an what?
No, no, I'm just laughing because I said loser after 50-hour achievement.
After 50 hours. Oh my god!
But right, but you know what I mean.
But like, I understand what you're saying, and you know, and it's not really relevant unless they put an achievement that that hardly anybody else could do. Like for instance, right. If they had a weapon creation system and they had like millions of different options and combinations of things that you could do to create a weapon, and you created a weapon so unique that you could actually display that weapon to everybody else and everybody be like, how the fuck did you make that?
That spurred on a very good idea. I think I see where he could be going with this, because you were talking about weapons. So I'm gonna turn around on my previous statement and say maybe there is some room for that. So let's say you've got Final Fantasy 15, just for example, okay, and you've got that weapon creation system you're talking about. Now you beat the game, and you can send this weapon to your friends who are also playing the game, so that when they like and let's say it's a certain level of power, a certain level of strength, this weapon. So it's going to show up in like. I'm playing Final Fantasy 15. Al's already beaten it. Al's made this incredible weapon, the Frostmourne sword from Warcraft. Okay. And it's like, he made this weapon maybe like with 10 hours to go in the game, and it's super powerful. I'm playing this game. And by the way, like Al sends me a message saying, hey, I got this weapon. Check it out. And I say, okay. And I read it and I say, okay, cool. I'm playing my game. I'm at the 35-hour mark, and I'm nearing the last quarter of the game. I walk into a shop, and boom, there's a weapon that Al made. Or something like that.
That would be cool.
That would be cool if they started doing stuff like that. I can understand exactly where he's going. That's cool. I guess I was kind of like thinking in a very closed, narrow way in terms of like, oh, the only thing you can really do for a single-player game is like achievements. But
But then again, that idea is not, it's not unique or original or anything, and that's a sign of the times too. What I just talked about is the same thing you could do in Diablo. I mean, like, you know.
But the thing is, though, that I think for Diablo is much less a single player experience than it is
multiplayer. It's still fun. Yeah. But it's still fun as a single player.
I'm not debating that. What I'm saying is like the focus of a game like Final Fantasy, whatever, and I'm going to fictionally say again, 15, is simply on, this is a story that one player would like to enjoy and sit through, but we're going to innovate and find some way to inject other principles, other multiplayer principles into this story like it's never been done before. So I think maybe there's room for that. Somebody, we're giving these ideas away for free, you know, if you want to kind of hire us. Any other thoughts on this single player, multiplayer, dotage? Thoughts on the word dotage?
No. all I'm thinking about now is dotage, where dot stands for damage over time. So now WTF. I want to go play Warcraft and make a warlock, because that's all they do, dots.
WTF, BBQ, PWN. All right, then we're moving on. More online shenanigans. Motley Crue's Rock Band tracks outsells the iTunes version.
It's because you can actually like interact with the Rock Band track.
Let's see, what does it say? Is Motley Crue's, this is from Game Live, this is from Chris Culler. Is Motley Crue's latest album going to illustrate the true power of Rock Band? Billboard reports that the band's latest single, released first as a downloadable Rock Band level, has so far sold more copies through MTV's video game than through iTunes. The title track off the band's upcoming album, Saints of Los Angeles, has reportedly sold over 47,000 copies through just the Xbox 360 version of Rock Band, and 10,000 copies through traditional music download services such as iTunes and Amazon. While this should not be read as an indication that the crew will sell more songs through Rock Band than anywhere else, it's certainly a sign that Harmonix's ideas about people discovering music through Rock Band are not without merit. Billboard nails it too, quote, in an age of rampant piracy, reaching fans where they are willing to spend the money is the primary goal. If our audience tells us that the that was Billboard. Now this is the band's management saying, if our audience tells us that they're sitting at Xbox and PlayStation, that's our job to do that. And I think that's really interesting. That, and I know that you were saying it's because you can interact with the game and the music, but I think my whole point is that why I'm a little surprised is because, you know, how many people own Rock Band versus visit iTunes or any other music service?
At least 47,000.
At least 47,000 people, that's right. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, it's surprising to me that it took this short of a time for this video game to become an actual platform for something else, you know, for music sales, you know, and it's just interesting to me how it happens that way. You know, because all this time, and maybe it's because music games are going to revolutionize games in general, but, you know, all this time we always hear about people like, this is the year 2008, and people are still blaming games for shit and still treating them like, you know, bastard stepchildren of Toys R Us aisles, you know? So it's like, it's kind of refreshing to see, even if it's just Motley Crue, and even if it is only 47,000 copies, that Billboard is starting to talk about this, you know?
Everybody's starting to talk about it. Unfortunately, it's like a little too late in the game for us to have jobs where we'll be secure in this shit. Because now, even on the news, like 2 weeks, 2 weeks ago, they were talking about New York City government is actually going to start funding video game developers.
Right.
And I was like, how did that happen? Like, after 25 some odd years,
right? Yeah,
you know.
I was hoping, I think that was the one that you missed. I was upset that we couldn't save that topic for you because you brought up the Manitoba topic in Canada. Mm-hmm. This just kind of makes me happy. Is there any other commentary on this? I mean, is Motley Crue even still good? I don't know their music.
I don't know. Does it still have Tommy Lee?
Yeah.
I guess so. I guess that's a no, huh, Tony? They're not still good. They have Tommy Lee? Fuck it. So I'm not going to try to segue this because it would be bad. So I'm just going to fresh start. Street Fighter IV is confirmed to be heading home. We knew that it would be an arcade game. Now it's confirmed for Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and in what's a shock to me, the PC.
Mm.
This is from Brandon Sinclair on GameSpot, the voice of Canada. The Street Fighter series has never been terribly exclusive, appearing as it has on the TurboGrafx-16, Super
Fighting
Nintendo, Game Boy, Dreamcast, Xbox, and most systems in between.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the funny thing is the Game Boy Color version of Street Fighter Alpha was actually pretty good. The Game Boy version of Street Fighter 2 was not that good, but it definitely wasn't as bad as the DOS version. Anyway, so it comes as no surprise that Capcom's upcoming arcade Street Fighter 4 would eventually find its way to other homes. Publisher announced today that it will bring Street Fighter 4 to the 360, PlayStation 3, and PC. It did not give any indication as to when the game would arrive on these platforms. In last October, a Capcom representative told GameSpot that the brawler was more than a year away, although the Japanese arcade edition would eventually be set for a late July debut. Street Fighter 4 is both a departure from and a return to the series' roots. The game eschews the franchise's classic 2D fighting formula in favor of stylized 3D visuals. Little misleading.
Yeah.
He means graphically, but the gameplay is 2D. It's all 2D, thank God. But the roster of characters includes the entire original cast of Capcom's most successful game of all time, Street Fighter 2, which is awesome. Except that Chun-Li's thighs are way too big again.
And she's got man hands.
She's got man hands, yeah.
She's Chinese. She's not supposed to be sexy.
hey, who better to ask than me, right? But I am really looking forward to this. I just want to get down some old classic Street Fighter with a few new tricks. I regretted hating on Street Fighter 3 Third Strike when it first came out. I do kind of like it now. It's not my favorite. It's a great game. It's just not something that I'm really into. But 4, you know, I like a good old bout of Street Fighter. I'll still play Turbo any day of the week. And I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this. What are your thoughts on it coming to PC?
Well, I don't know.
That's interesting.
Like, get a handle. Get a handle.
Oh, no, no, of course. Of course.
Wait
absolutely.
Wait for the Vista to lag you out. And, you know, just a couple of other glitches that are going to happen with the computer version as opposed to the console version. I knew, of course, that if they were going to release it on arcade, they're definitely going to wait a long time before it reaches the platform. I mean, the arcade is going to be its marketing device.
Maybe. You know? My worry is that mm-hmm. because arcades are almost dead
yeah.
in America,
yeah.
how potent is that as a tool? You
Unless
know?
You go to Chuck E. Cheese, it probably wouldn't be because you
right,
know, nobody's
right.
going to spend $4,000 or even you know a monthly rental price that might be a little bit too pricey for a business to have that system in their pizza shop and whatever the business is. If mm-hmm. they don't have a guarantee that in this day and age where arcades are just going downhill, that they'll get a profit on it. You know, that they'll be able to recoup any monies that they lose on renting this particular arcade unit.
They should stick an advertisement right in the arcade machine, how they mm-hmm. used to do those winners don't use drug things.
Yeah.
Where right. a screen pops up and says, coming to Xbox 360, PlayStation 3, and PC in like 6 months. But you can
yeah.
play it here and now. And they stick it in a movie theater.
They could do that, yeah. They could do that. Then everybody will be clamoring.
Because yeah,
go ahead. I would yeah. say that people would probably yeah. just be like, okay, well, I'll just wait till it comes out. I don't need to waste my dollar on two rounds of Street Fighter.
Well, I'm just sick of waiting online for stupid Cruise in USA, which is a shit racing. But I mean, like, what I'm saying is, if anything, if they're going to go that route, at the very least, they could start saying like, okay, well, it's not coming out for another 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Better get you in now. But it's going
right.
to be awesome.
Also, you could see, yeah, you could definitely see how it plays. You could, you know, get the feeling of it and stuff. And by the time console comes out, especially 360 with all its achievements, you'll be racking up achievements immediately. You know yeah. what I'm saying? I mean, that's
right.
a draw. That's a, you know, everything is a draw to me when it comes to a video game of this caliber, especially to people that love the series and are missing it and want something new. Me personally, I don't think I'm going to get it. I'm still waiting for Marvel Capcom 3.
Right. Oh,
good
that
luck.
Would be really fun. That would be fun if it happened.
That would
but
be fucking great. What, I mean, like, go on. Sorry.
What I think would be cool, I don't mm-hmm. I know how viable this is, but much like how they did with the F-Zero in the arcade and Killer Instinct where Nintendo was like, you could take your memory card to the
uh-huh.
arcade unit. I don't know how many people actually
used
it.
Same thing with Neo Geo. Yeah.
Well, they
right.
kind
Same
of discontinued
Geo.
That in the U.S. because
right.
people are destructive.
Right.
But
well,
it does
I,
happen in Japan
right.
all the time.
Right. And I was thinking, what if you somehow were able to make the arcade booth, the arcade machine network enabled and say, okay, if I'm an Xbox Live subscriber or if I'm or whatever, if I'm a Street Fighter player, I can link my account, much like you can link your account in Guitar Hero,
mm-hmm.
no matter what console you have, you can link it to online and you can still compete against other people. Not dynamically, but at the very least you can compare scores. If you
okay.
can say, I've got a Street Fighter 3 version for my home console, whether it be 360, PlayStation 3, or PC,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to link this account to my online to a Street Fighter 4 – I said 3 before. I can't believe that. But to a Street Fighter 4 website that keeps track of everyone's accounts, much like the GuitarHero.com site does it. When I go to the arcade, I can punch in my password,
mm-hmm.
and I can log in with my character with all my data there, with my win streak, with my loss streak, with my
right.
scores. If I have, like – It, oh, man, imagine if they did something like Street Fighter Alpha 3's World Tour mode where you can build your own character out of Ryu.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can make him the Street Fighter 2 version, or you can make him the Super Street Fighter 2 version, or you could give him one power bar or three power bars or the custom combo, and you upload that to the arcade, and you can still play it at the movie theater with your friends, and then you can go home later, and that would be really
cool.
That would
cool be kick-ass. I think that would fucking start a fucking revolution in video game. Maybe that would bring the arcades back.
But you know,
because arcades are not very interactive. They
right.
really aren't.
They kind of did that already.
Huh?
With F-Zero AX and GX, you were able to customize your car.
Right, but we're talking what I'm saying is that, like, they had to discontinue it, right? Because people were destructive with the memory card ports and everything?
Well, yeah, that's a memory card thing. But
yeah.
then they also had some kind of network something or other for Marvel's Capcom 2 for the Dreamcast. But this is, of course, only in Japan. you were able to use the VMS or the VMU, if you'd like to speak in American terms, in the arcade machine, but it also had some kind of network communication such that when you were at home, you were able to track your points and things like that and stuff you did in the arcade, as well as getting it off of the memory card. But, you know, things like that, it's like, if it could be purely network-oriented,
that's
what
I'm saying.
It would be a much better thing, yeah.
What I'm saying is it needs to be network-oriented, and it needs to take advantage of the PlayStation Network and Xbox Live because, you know, and you can please correct me if I'm wrong because I did not use Sega.net. I didn't use it. I don't know how robust it was when compared to something like the way Xbox Live is today. And I'm not criticizing it. All I'm saying is that we're at a point in time now where we do have the capability to really push something like this so that it doesn't die.
Yeah, SegaNet was nothing compared to Xbox Live. Like, Xbox Live is known as the, you know, online community network
right.
for a reason.
Right, and not only that, but just the ability to link it together with, mm-hmm. you know, just the idea that someone came up and said, all right, well, we got to make a way for Wii players and PS2 players to be able to compete with each other in Guitar Hero. So mm-hmm. let's start up a community site for it that automates it all for that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that concept, I don't think, if it was around back in the Dreamcast days, it wasn't really pushed.
No.
That's why I'm saying it needs to be pushed now.
And it wasn't really pushed because everybody was on dial-up.
Right, exactly. And now, well, now that we have, you know, but go ahead, Tony. So no, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, maybe we're starting to see a little bit of history repeating itself if it does become successful and they do the things that we're talking about. I mean, even without online play and without your stats and whatever, without everything else, Street Fighter II, when it first came out, was a fucking just a whole genre changer.
It was a phenomenon. Yeah.
It was, yeah. Forget about it. Everybody, I was even one of the 30 people crowding around a machine watching two people go at it, okay? This could possibly be the same thing if they implement those ideas that we talked about
right way,
here.
Right.
You know, especially if you make a kick-ass character or you make a kick-ass combo that nobody else has seen. Oh my God. I mean, like, everybody will want to know what your combo is and stuff, your specifications, and you'll be like, no, it's a secret. And everybody will be trying to duplicate your combo. They'd be like talking to you, be a legend. Be like, oh, I've seen this one combo. I don't even know how it happened.
And
you know?
they could send instant replays up to a server.
Exactly.
If Capcom decided to set up network servers.
Yeah.
You just brought another cool thing that I might like to see. Like if they made a Marvel Crush Capcom 3 and if they made it like network oriented and, mm-hmm. and connected, you could build your own team of three characters, or what are they gonna do? Five now?
Let's
say three. Yeah. You build your own team of three characters. The more you play with that team, the you know, kind of the better it gets in different ways and I don't know, like kinda like
That's
an
cool.
RPG. You know, that would be kind of cool if they did. I don't know how they balance it. That's the one problem. With fighting games, there's a whole big concern about balance. Mm-hmm. And you don't ever want to throw things out of balance. But
right.
It's an idea. It could be cool. Any other Street Fighter creamery thoughts? Or wow, it's raining now.
Yep.
It is? Damn it.
It show is.
All righty. Let's move on to what Al labeled Shex.
No, it's Shex.
Shex. Last week, we talked about Beyond Good and Evil possibly returning, and now it's confirmed. Again, this is from Brendan Sinclair, the voice of Canada from GameSpot. Earlier this month, Rayman creator Michel Ancel told French magazine Jeux Vidéo that he had been in pre-production on a sequel to Beyond Good and Evil for a year. The project had yet to receive a green light from Ubisoft. That go-ahead has apparently been given. The publisher capped off its Ubi Days press event with a teaser trailer for Ancel's next project. And the clip featured the porcine sidekick of the original game, Paige, who is the Uncle Pig. In the teaser, camera, blah, blah, okay, he's talking about the teaser. So, along with this teaser, there's screenshots, and I'm a little disappointed in just the style that they decided to go in. If anybody remembers the old Beyond Good and Evil, it was kind of like a Disney-esque, very clean, smooth coloring, kind of not too big on the details, more emphasis on just the brightness of it. And now I see a picture of Uncle Paige, and he looks like a real pig, kind of like animated, of course, but he looks more realistic and there're wrinkles and, you know, it looks all like Mad Max-y kind of. And it's like, you know, it lost that charm at least this screenshot, I'm not going to judge the whole game based on it, but this screenshot, if it's an indication, it loses some charm. And I feel like, you know, the way that they did Ratchet and Clank on the PlayStation 3 is exactly how I would have imagined Beyond Good and Evil 2 would look like on a next-gen console. And it's just like kind of jarring to see it. It's like when there was this guy who did a painting of Mario and Princess Peach if it were a, quote, mature game.
Oh, so, you mean the big fat Mario and Peach on his lap?
Not even fat, but like, yeah, he's husky and he looks like a real person, not a real person, but he looks more realistic and more like a comic book character. Princess Peach is in like a short skirt and she's like kind of dangling off his lap, like, you know, holding on to him. And they're sitting on a row of bricks just kind of looking at the sunset or something. And it looks very stocky and very mature and very whatever. And it looked cool, but at the same time, it's just kind of like...
Why?
It's not why, because it was a cool picture, but it's kind of like it's not really Mario, you
gotta
know.
Send me that picture.
I'm sorry, not really Mario, you know. It's just not. It's cool, of course. It's cool, but it's just you know. It'd be cool if they did a spin-off to see what it would look like. But in the end, you know, give me my old classic Mario. You know, I'll take I'll take Samus for her to look gritty because she is the one who's shooting things up.
It's,
you know,
more like Link. Everybody's clamoring for Link to
Link
look real.
Too.
I mean, you wouldn't do it for Mario.
Right, exactly. It's just it's a different thing. And this is somewhat similar. It's like, why, you know, the pig was adorable. It was a pig. It was an ugly pig, but it was adorable in the first game because it looked like a Disney character. And now he really is just an ugly pig. An ugly pig and a wife beater with cellulite.
Yeah. Okay, so
you know, why render the cellulite?
My only misgiving about these screenshots is that right next to it, they have an advertisement for GameTap, and it's for Jericho. They got Jericho! Then now I'm definitely not going to buy this game because they had Jericho advertised next to the screenshot.
But yeah, looking at the screenshots in depth more, Game Life has bigger versions of these screenshots. From a quality standpoint, it looks fantastic. You know, stylistically, I may disagree with it, but it looks fantastic from a quality standpoint.
Right.
And my disappointment is that they only show Jade from the back. They don't show her face, so we don't know what she looks like now. Mm-hmm. We don't see how they've reimagined her for this new version. Let's read the post from Chris Kohler. What did he say about this? Big news from Movies House press conference in Paris today. Blah 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 blah. I'm really excited for BG&E to make its return. It was a commercial flop, and it seemed for a while that the cliffhanger ending of the first would never be resolved. And I remember he was always saying that he'd make a trilogy out of it. So I'm happy to see this.
Okay.
Thoughts?
That's what I was going to say. I think that, it's kind of obvious that they probably went this way because they want to attract a larger audience,
right.
Audience that looks at something and judges a game based on how it looks. And, I mean, just judging on quality of page here, and I mean, these are, I don't know if these are screenshots from
cinema,
the actual game, because I saw the video,
right?
And this is the video. He's like basically sitting in front of the car and he's acting like he's asleep, and there's a bug flying close to his face, and then he starts inhaling and the bug is trying to fly away. And you hear the buzzing get higher and higher and higher. It's like, and you just see this wind going toward his nose. And then the bug fails and it gets sucked in.
Yeah.
And Paige is like, 50.
50.
And then he sits back down, he closes his eyes, and then it fades out. It doesn't fade out. It zooms out from the car because it looks like they're waiting for service.
Right.
The car's all fucked up. And then you hear 51. So he's just like eating these bugs while they're waiting, and all you see is Jade sitting on the car with the umbrella, and it's real vague, but it's like the art style, I can understand where you're coming from with that.
Yeah.
But I think that it's gonna attract a lot more people saying, wow, look at that. Look at those wrinkles and shit.
I hope
really
though
like a pig.
I hope, though, that they don't let the style of the art limit the animation, because it sounds like, from what you described, it still has that lighthearted feel, which is what I loved about that game.
Yeah.
And if they match up that feeling with the way that these characters move, then the visual style doesn't bother me as much. And I shouldn't say that it really bothers me. It's just not what I really have in mind for BG&E. You know, like I said, quality-wise, it looks great. It's just, like, you know, does it really match up? So, like, if the animations can follow suit and replicate the kind of happy-go-lucky, lighthearted feeling that you just described in the trailer, then I'll be okay with it. I just, you know, I really think that, you know, when people looked at Ratchet and Clank, they were pretty impressed.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, Ratchet and Clank was awesome because it was like, whoa, these are the FMVs, and
no, they're gameplay.
This is real gameplay.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm gonna play this regardless of what they do with the style. I don't care. I just, you know, it's just a nitpick.
Mm-hmm.
But here's something that is more of a nitpick that really kind of makes me cringe. I mean, I'm glad you found this. This is from NextGen.biz. Ubisoft says Beyond Good and Evil 2 to be more casual.
Yeah.
Ubisoft plans to make the sequel to Beyond Good and Evil more accessible than its predecessor in order to avoid the commercial shortcomings endured by the original. Let's see if there are any details here. Quote, we saw with Beyond Good and Evil that so many customers were extremely happy with the game. We had a different audience at the time. We had more core gamers and casual gamers than we have today. I think the game was probably a little too difficult for the general gamers at that time.
Please.
We're going to make it more accessible and make sure that it's really done for the new generation that's come into video games. And I'll quote Al himself, who said this so eloquently on our bucket. When he pasted up this news story, he says, what the fuck? Ubisoft boss Yves Guillemot's excuse, the game was too hard. My ass is too hard. Yes, your ass is too hard. I agree with that. Or what, huh?
No. Wait, what?
Oh, Jesus.
What? Huh?
What the fuck?
No, he didn't
fuck?
Say that.
What, huh?
Yes,
I did. But no, what was too hard? I don't... In remembering the game, the only tough spots I remember are a few stealth things here and there. So maybe if they turn that down, but for the most part, it wasn't that hard.
But what
yeah,
does
I mean,
he
not
mean?
Even the slaughterhouse race was hard.
What does he mean more accessible? Does that mean like cheesy mini games thrown in the middle?
No, I'm assuming it's just that the level of difficulty is just turned down by a hefty margin. Like I was talking about the stealth sections, maybe they'll take those out entirely, which sucks because I like those sections.
Okay, or... then why make a part two?
Right, right.
Part two is your core, your core gamers. Beliefs that they're going to get better than the first one that they played.
Right.
I don't care about the fucking casual gamers. They're over there playing Dr. Layton's fucking Curious Village. Let them stay on that shit. No, they might be.
We play.
We fit.
Professor Layton's a freaking cool concept. That's what I want to... That's why I don't play. But still, like...
But it is a casual game. I mean, like, you know, anybody could get into that. Anybody.
Not anybody.
Hard 12 matchstick shit. Going on over there.
The concept is mini games, but the actual mini games themselves are really hard.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, no, I agree with you. Like, if they're gonna take it out, why do it? Because I love that part about this game is that it combines stealth with this kind of like Disney adventure.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't know. Like, I don't think they're gonna go that far. I think they're gonna do it where it's more forgiving, and that's okay. I actually think it's okay for them to make the stealth sections more forgiving because there were some parts that were really reliant on trial and error, and that just, you know, I could see that turning somewhat off, but everything else about the game wasn't really that hard. Basically, the reason why I'm scoffing is it's like, well, aside from the stealth, what else could you do to make it that much easier? You know, are you going to make
it wasn't hard?
Yeah, because
well,
it wasn't hard.
Now, right, and that now I'm going to have to pop the game into the console
to see to remember.
I'm going to replay it. Because I'm like, you know, I'm close to the end, but I don't even know. I don't remember what happened in the game. But I'm gonna have somebody who's casual try and play and see what they think of it.
Yeah, I want to rephrase my previous statement about Dr. Layton's Curious Village. Anyone with a brain could play it. The reason why I said anybody will play it and that it's casual is that my wife, who plays zero games, plays that game.
Well, that's
zero
okay.
games.
I mean, that's fine, you know, but
you
like.
Know? And also Brain Age.
Yeah, that one is definitely
that's one you find a lot of people. You're like, what? You got a DS? Oh, I got Brain Age. Oh, okay.
That's definitely nowhere near as challenging as Layton. But yeah, Layton is something that I really do want to get into at some point after my backlog is destroyed. But
she gave me a few questions. That's fucked up.
She's like, I can't do this. You do it for me.
No, no. She like figured it out after like half an hour of her and her rest of her coworkers, you know, panning their brains together. Right. So you know it's fucked up. But it's something that everybody got into. You know what
right.
I'm saying?
Right, right, right. No, no, no. Yeah, I totally understand that. Any more thoughts on Beyond Good and Evil 2, or should we move on to some crap that's going on with politics? Wow.
Let's move on to that crap.
Okay, wait, so.
What was wow?
No, he Tony going,
no,
oh,
I said, okay. Moving on!
So, okay. GamePolitics.com has this article titled, In New Zealand, another, quote, GTA made me do it case. The lawyer for a 25-year-old New Zealand man who pleaded guilty to beating a police officer and stealing a patrol car has blamed his client's crime in part on playing Grand Theft Auto, and the judge apparently agreed. Wow. As reported by the Dominion Post, attorney Chris Nichols argued at the sentence hearing for Tim Reid that his client's behavior was influenced by the game. From the news account, Ray committed violent offenses and compulsively played Grand Theft Auto. Mr. Nichols said the video game that shared violence toward police was a public safety concern, with the game promoting the behavior hour. Wellington District... Sorry, I had to... Wellington...
It's spelled that way. You might as well say it that way.
Wellington District Court Judge Dennis Berry jailed Reid for 5 years. He said Reid was hardwired for violence and antisocial behavior hour and programmed by his recreational pursuits.
Reid, okay, first off,
let me finish.
Reid, yeah.
According to the report, began smoking pot at age 5. He had been physically and sexually abused while growing up and continues to abuse drugs and alcohols. He has priors for assault and robbery. Moreover, he is a 25-year-old man, not an impressionable adolescent. Yet a video game is to blame? Question mark. Thank you, Game Politics. What were you going to say?
I was going to say that this judge is a stupid, stupid head.
Stupid.
Because
you dumb head.
Because he said that the guy was hardwired for violence and antisocial behavior hour. So, obviously, I mean, he says that the game programmed him to do this. When
no,
in fact,
probably exacerbated
he already
it.
Had it. Yeah, I mean,
yeah, exacerbated it.
It may have exacerbated it, but I think that just the fact that he was hardwired for violence and antisocial behavior or from his, you know, early life crap.
Okay,
that just already puts him at risk. I mean, isn't Grand Theft Auto banned in this country?
Australia, not New Zealand.
Anyway, I mean, like, this is a judge trying to be a psych major. And, you know, how do you say a guy is hardwired
psych major
for yeah, this behavior?
I didn't actually spell it like that.
And,
that's something that, what's his face says? Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew.
Yeah. So he's hardwired for it, and Grand Theft Auto was the catalyst to put him on yet another violent fit of crime. I'm sorry? Are you what school of psychology did you come from, Judge? I mean, how long did it take you to become a judge? What, 25 years? By the way, it takes 28 hours to get to New Zealand, right? So they're on an 8-year backlog because they're saying Grand Theft Auto. Which one? Which one? Is it the first one? I mean, the first one on PS2? He just got it and he just, like, fucking went on a killing spree now?
According to the screenshot, it is.
Yeah, this is the beginning of just things to come. They're repeating our history. Lots of luck, New Zealand. I am never coming to your country. That's it. Takes too fucking long, and you guys are on a backlog. That's it.
It takes too long, and they're on a backlog.
I don't know. It's such a ongoing issue, and like, I don't know. It of course it sends back everything. Jack Thompson, every Two Live Crew, and all that bullshit. And then you know, oh NWA, they said fuck the police. We got to watch out now. Uh oh.
You know what? Actually, this is a good thing. Maybe it'll get Jack Thompson to move over there, because now he has a forum where he's actually going to be heard.
Jake Thompson,
and they're going to spell it T H O M
Thompson. No.
Yes, Thompson. O-U-N. Yeah, there you go.
We love you, foreign countries. We're just fucking with you.
Nah, we're gonna shit on you.
Totally different topic. No way to segue, but the PC Gaming Alliance speaks, and this is something that I'm really interested in because I want to know what they're going to do to combat this supposed PC gaming crisis.
Yep.
So this is from Extreme Tech. It's an interview with Randy Stude. who is the president of PC Gaming Alliance and the director of the gaming program office at Intel. If you want to read this, it is on extremetech.com. It was posted on May 21st, and the title is The PC Gaming Alliance Speaks. Let's see if they have any meat here, like what their plans are. What are the goals of the PC Gaming Alliance? Is there a list of deliverables that the Alliance is planning? At present, we have the following set as our goals. One, be the worldwide advocacy group for gaming on personal computers. Okay, so that's a goal for the Alliance. It's not a really goal for PC gaming, so let's see what else. Publish market research and forecasts that will aid the game development and publishing community, as well as the PC OEM community, when deciding how to support gaming on the personal computer. Okay, that's a step. Three, publish game and hardware minimum performance recommendations. I guess they must mean just more prominently, because they do put them on every box. They just don't
do it. But they're in small print. And
they're in small print, right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then the answer to the next question, what should we expect to see from the PCGA in the coming year? PC game market researcher forecasts, which is what he already said. Two, game and hardware minimum performance recommendations, which is
what he already said.
Yeah. Let's see. One of the frequent complaints of PC gamers is that they have to suffer through crappy ports of console games. Deus Ex Independence War comes to mind. What can the PC Gaming Alliance do to alleviate this? And will publishers like Activision actually listen, given the fact that they have to develop for multiple platforms anyway? PC Gaming Alliance has no plans to do anything about game design and publishing criteria. If a game is a crappy port of a console game, then PC gamers shouldn't buy it. No game purchaser should be fooled into a $50 to $60 purchase. Most games have demo downloads available. Try it and then buy it if you like it. That's my advice. So they're not going to do anything about that. Although, to me, that counts as information, you know. I would hope that they would talk about that at the least. Mm-hmm. Month in and month out, the PC game charts seem to be dominated by The Sims and World of Warcraft. Do MMORPGs hurt or help the PC game industry? Remember, we were discussing this a couple of months ago. Put another way, does the Alliance feel that subscription games help or hinder PC gamer budgets? He says, stay tuned. The PC Gaming Alliance intends to paint a realistic picture of the entire video game industry for PCs.
Okay.
So I guess he can't talk anything about that now. Well, I'm just saying it's good to see that he's going to pay attention to it, because I think it's a problem. I actually do think it's a problem at this point. Let's see. One of the historical – you work for Intel. One of the historical complaints against Intel that its company's integrated graphics consistently offer bare-bones graphics performance. However, PCs still don't come with a label or any indication that the box will be able to play a particular game, which might require a standalone accelerator from AMD or NVIDIA. What can the Alliance do to alleviate that? He says, considering my role as the president of the Alliance, and for the sake of this interview, I will have to provide no comment on products from any company. As of right now, the Alliance has not announced any plans for any labels, logos, and brands. So he has basically said nothing that gives me any confidence that this thing is going to work.
Yeah.
Long, drawn-out
He's bound by a lot of shit. He shouldn't be working for Intel.
I guess, yeah. I shouldn't blame him, because a lot of the stuff he can't make a comment on, like you said, but it's still... I wish there was more. I wish there was more that I could listen to that gives me confidence. Right now, I just can't... It doesn't... I don't know. It just doesn't instill any confidence in me. However, this does. And what did you call this guy earlier, Al?
Fat ass?
Yeah. Fat ass cast.
Gabe's a fat
Just
ass.
Kidding, Gabe. We love you. Yeah. Valve says, no PC gaming crisis. This is by Will Smith and Chris Graft, writing for Next Generation, nextgen.biz. Valve software titles can be found on numerous platforms, but Valve boss Gabe Newell took some time to show the studio's continuing support of the PC more from Valve's press event within. PC is Valve's home, and at a press event Thursday at its Bellevue, Washington-based headquarters, the company made that clear in its defense of the platform. The company, behind the 15 million user-strong Steam digital distribution service and PC favorites such as Half-Life, Counter-Strike, and Team Fortress 2, went full force to slap down the notions that the PC market is in some kind of irreversible turmoil. Is there a crisis in PC gaming? Newell asked during a presentation. No, but there is a perception problem. His comments closely mirror those of Kevin Unangst, head of Microsoft's Games for Windows, who expressed almost the exact same sentiment. Let me interrupt for a second and say that Games for Windows is a shit endeavor. much worse than I thought it would be, because of the fact that they're making gamers pay for this freaking service. It's not smoothly integrated into the games. If you play a Steam game, all that shit's integrated like Xbox Live is. The chat, being able to shift tab and see your community members at a moment's notice. With games for Windows, it's not like Xbox Live. It's not completely integrated into like the Windows system, at least on Vista, as far as I know about it. On XP, it's not integrated in, but I can see why. You know, it's not Vista. But anyway, it's just anyway. The reason PC backers say that there is a perception problem is most of the time, particularly in North America, with the monthly US-only MPD retail reports, people aren't seeing the whole PC gaming picture. Going by the latest annual US MPD results, PC gaming revenue appears to have declined year-on-year to $910.7 million in 2007. But MPD's figures only include boxed retail product, not subscriptions and paid online content, which are growing substantially. Now that the MPD has begun tracking revenues beyond box retail product, a clearer picture of the market is being painted. In May, the MPD group reported that online subscriptions alone generated $1 billion annually.
Of course.
That's not including boxed copies. That's incredible. Newell said that in the next 3 months, its digital revenue from Valve titles will surpass its retail revenue. Quote, "Only now are organizations such as MPD beginning to track alternative revenue streams, MMO subscriptions, etc., and discovering billions of previously unacknowledged spending on PC gaming. Many times industry watchers focus on only the US and UK PC gaming markets," Newell said, "although consumers in major European markets, like Germany, for example, and emerging markets like China, Korea, StarCraft, and Russia, are almost solely dedicated to PCs, leaving consoles by the wayside. It's not just missing data or information that have created holes in the PC gaming story," according to Newell. Read one slide during his presentation headed as, "Why isn't this story being told? As all of you know too well, the three of the major console holders spend millions of dollars each month on PR teams to seed stories to the contrary." Newell also said that no one is taking ownership in spreading the PC story. So maybe that is the goal of the PC Gaming Alliance, to be that helm, taking that ownership, to put out that PR. So, and that much I did get from what that guy said in the interview, because remember, he said, "We will put more forecasts and marketing and blah, 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 blah." So, that's one step. But but let me actually finish reading that article before I even say anything about that. It ends with, "But the multi-company PC Gaming Alliance isn't an integral part of that story, at least as far as Valve is concerned. Asked during a Q&A session why Valve isn't a part of the PC Gaming Alliance, he said, quote, shipping products is more important than companies sending representatives together to all agree that PC games should be doing better. Newell also cited data from the Gartner Group that showed that there are over 260 million online PC gamers in the world. Consumers bought more than 255 million new PCs last year. Okay, so this is what I've been saying. I think it's in trouble from a perception standpoint, but like, no one was talking about Steam. The thing here is that Newell says that he doesn't release Steam numbers. So how
he
does? He
does not.
Unless that's changed in the last couple of months since I heard that podcast with someone else, how is that going to help change the perception that he himself won't release the numbers? So I don't know. I don't know. Maybe that'll change, but I mean, what is your feeling on this supposed crisis, if anything?
I don't know. He's definitely right. It's a perception thing, because when you talk about WoW having 10 million subscribers, each paying, 10 million accounts, doesn't necessarily mean 10 million individual people. But still, that does mean 10 million times $14.99, or any variant where it becomes like $12.99 or $11.99.
It's times 10 billion. A million.
Ten million
per month. That's why I said 10 million.
So it's like, you know, you got that plus box copies of the game or downloadables. There are downloadables that still need $49.99 to activate, $19.99 now to activate the original game, and then you know, the expansion is $30.
Right.
So, you know, you got all that money, and if people still buying that stuff because they need more accounts, that's a lot of money that's not really being accounted for. And then you have all the online stuff. You got Steam and Is there anything else other than Steam besides private downloadable stuff?
Oh, are you talking about digital distribution methods like Steam or anything that you can download from? Because there's stuff like Direct to Drive and like
you pay for that.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah. Direct to Drive is just digital distro, right. Legal digital distro.
Of course.
And then like I think that's an IGN thing. And then there's like, I'm trying to let me go look. PCGamer.com/store uses another engine or something. I think. I guess the I don't know, but like yeah, I mean, Direct to Drive is the only one that comes to mind immediately.
Mm-hmm.
EA has EA Link, but Steam is the only community based interface that is also a store, because Games for Windows Live, I don't know how much they have in terms of a store yet. It's still mostly Xbox Live. EA Link, I don't think it has an integrated kind of application. So like I said, Steam is really the greenhouse thing from Penny Arcade, I don't think is going to be like Steam, like we clarified those couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that Steam is really the only kind of like comprehensive Xbox Live mimicker on the PC, if you will. It has downloads, it has community, it has leaderboards. So... And I think that's the only one out there right now. And God forbid if another one comes up, because I really just want one standard at this point.
Yeah, that makes things so much easier.
And Steam is doing a great job of it, such a great job.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Slunks is in our chat and is saying hi. He just couldn't make it because they're really loud dogs barking in his room. So, yeah,
who
there you
let
go.
The dogs out?
Slunks.
Sorry.
Wow, it's really coming down now, the rain.
Yeah, it kind of passed by
hasn't
us.
Come to
but you were saying something, Al, before I answered the question. What were you saying?
I don't know.
You asked if Steam was the only one out there, basically.
Oh, yeah. I don't remember what I was saying. Sorry.
Tony, do you remember what he was saying?
Something about Steam and a computer and maybe something about games.
I think I was just talking about how... there isn't really much to go by when it comes to buying games because, I mean, people say that people pirate games all goddamn time, blah, 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 which, you know, that is kind of true, but if the environment is still here, it's got to be people buying games. And especially when you have games like MMOs, which require accounts, you can't pirate games that require an account because you have to register with the server.
Right,
but then there are people who go out of their way to do kind of stuff like that, which I'm not even going to discuss.
Yeah, and I think on the whole piracy issue, like if it can be done, people are going to do it. That doesn't mean that there isn't a legion of people out there who are, you know, law-abiding citizens who will pay for the product that they respect and they like.
Mm-hmm.
Like I have this friend who I'm not going to name, I'm not going to out him at all. He or she or him or her, but
But definitely he.
Right. I'm just for simplification saying he. You know,
right.
His whole
person.
He downloads movies, okay? Illegally. What?
This person.
No, I'm saying he because I don't. I'm saying he for simplicity's sake. But
oh, okay.
He downloads because I'm too lazy to say this person. Three syllables. He downloads movies, okay, illegally because he doesn't feel that there is a proper venue for him to get. The movies in the way that he wants. He is willing to pay for it,
mm-hmm.
but there is no venue for him to pay for it. He doesn't want to have to pay for DRM to go put it on an iPod. He doesn't want to buy an iPod. He doesn't.
Wait, are you talking about movies that have been released or on DVD that are out of the theaters, or are you talking about movies still in the theaters?
I honestly don't know. I'm not quite sure what he
downloads. I'm not understanding what he means by they don't have the proper venue.
Well, let's say that I'm assuming that it's movies that are already released, but what I'm assuming is that when you see, I'm trying to think of it, like any Disney movie that came out recently that came out for iTunes, okay? He doesn't want to have to go through iTunes and deal with Apple's bullshit DRM crap, which I hate.
Okay.
He doesn't want to have to go and deal with that. He wants basic...
So it's a exclusive to that.
It's exclusive to iTunes. I think you can do like something called Amazon Unbox where you can download the movie, but I'm not sure how that works. Uh-huh. I think basically it's like this. He buys games off of Steam because it's simple, It's easy. Okay. It's fairly priced. It's legal. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't have to buy a disc. He gets it in the way that he wants.
So, and sorry to interrupt, but he just doesn't like discs.
That's not the only thing. He just feels that Steam is the best venue. It's organized and it's, you know what I mean? It's basically the best made store.
Right. I'm just trying to relate it to the movie thing, if there is a relation.
Right. He wants to be able to watch them as he pleases. If he, I'm sure he owns some DVDs, but if he just wants to watch a movie without having to go out and buy the DVD, he wants to be able to do that. He wants to be able to do what iTunes lets you do without dealing with Apple's bullshit.
Got it.
Wow, I had much better reasons for piracy.
So basically, what I'm saying is, this is an example of someone who does pirate stuff, but given a well constructed legal alternative, he will gladly pay the money. So what I'm saying is that this is and I'm not excusing piracy. I'm just saying that this is his reasoning to parallel this to Steam. People who probably used to pirate games, there's probably a big subset of people who wanted to pay for the games, but they just could not agree with the secure ROM and all those digitally protected discs and all those. All that crap like Star Force and all that stuff that gets installed to your PC. They didn't want to get involved with those rootkits and all that shit. And so they're like, you know what? The only other way is to circumvent this copy protection and play a pirated copy. Now that I can play it on Steam, I will gladly pay for it. People who are downloading things off of Napster, once they put up iTunes and said, hey, look, what you're doing is illegal, but we want to make this available to you, and we want to make it available to you at a fair price. You want the song? All you need to do is pay a dollar. And people said, okay.
Yep.
People were willing to buy it. Because they were offered a legal alternative that was reasonably priced and well organized. The only thing now is that Apple's Apple's DRM is kind of shit. But the mainstream doesn't realize that and they don't care because iPods are so ubiquitous. So that's okay.
But then they also have, I think they do. I know Microsoft has it, and I think they followed the suit of Apple for this, DRM-free MP3s. And that's pretty much taken over a lot of the content that they already have that has DRM.
Right. And the great thing about that is now it's even a step further where it's easier for people to get to the music they want, so they'll pay for it. That's the whole point I'm trying to make, is that once you open it up, there's going to be a strong enough market for people to pay for it. Radiohead released their album on their own website. Their own, not even through iTunes, just on their own website. They said, you can pay whatever you want for this album. We're not going to charge you. Maybe just a download fee. That's it. And even though most people bought In Rainbows for free, they still made a ton of money because there were enough people willing to buy it. So when people give me the argument of, oh, PC games going to die because of piracy, we have Steam now. I don't think that's going to be as much of an issue for their financial – I don't think it's going to be as much of a financial issue anymore. It just comes down to – now I think the biggest thing is getting these system requirements down pat, getting the people who push technology to also scale it back for people to be able to freaking play a game on their PC. So
– I mean, but if there's any reason for any business on a PC to die, it's that. You know, it's because people are not going to be able to play these games on their existing computers.
Exactly.
And they're not willing to spend $3,000 on a PC that can be able to play these games. Unfortunately, they have a console that could do that, and that's a very, very reasonably priced alternative.
And what I hope for this PC Gaming Alliance to do with their information dissemination is say, hey, look, okay, Al, how much did you spend on your new PC?
About $900.
$900. Okay. Now, what you use your old monitor, right? Okay, so $900 gets you a very, very good PC, a spanking new PC with which to play games. $900 is not $400, I admit that. But because you're talking about a machine that not only plays games, but it basically, like, every home will want a computer, all right?
Yeah, a lot of people's quality of life comes from computer, internet, and stuff.
People who want to burn DVDs and burn CDs and do all this stuff will need a reasonably priced powered computer. You know, you can come to me with all these quotes of, yeah, well, I can buy a computer for only $300. You know,
yeah, and lots of luck.
Like I can buy, but like it's like
saying lots of luck doing things on it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like, I can buy an eMachines computer for $300, you know, so you're telling me that I have to spend $600 extra to get this machine to be up to gaming par. no, I'd rather just buy a console. Wrong. Mm-hmm. Because you get that eMachines $300 computer, that's a computer you give to grandma for their internet.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a computer that you use to do all the stuff that you, the 25-year-old person who likes to play games and do all this weird other shit, like burn DVD, weird, I don't. It's not even weird.
And porn.
Other stuff, you know, and then like you want to send a video up to YouTube, so you want to put it through Movie Maker. You're not going to do that
on a porn.
You're not going to do that on a $300 PC. I'm sorry. You know?
No way.
So my whole thing is they need to educate people on just how much it costs and what value they're getting out of a PC.
Mm-hmm.
You have all this versatility, and if you can separate the cost of making your PC game ready, and if for people who don't want to play games on their monitor, you could put your PC in your living room and attach it to your high-def TV, brother. It's available now. You can do that, you know? So it's not impractical to say that I can have a big couch gaming experience with my computer. You can. I think that what Intel and AMD need to do is get off their ass with their integrated graphics and finally come up with a solution. I don't know if you remember CJ Hope was asking this a while ago. He was like, will integrated graphics ever be viable?
Right.
And we said, fuck no. I was half joking. I'm hoping that I'm wrong. I want it to come to a point where it is viable, where not only is it viable, but the developers recognize that, hey, this is the baseline that we have to program for. Okay, and when we program for this baseline, let's say that the future of graphics is I'll make a guess. In like 3 years, the future of integrated graphics will be to the point where the graphics engines or the graphics hardware is about as capable as a Wii or maybe a 360, if I may be so optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, once you have that, there's no problem. Because even though the 360 has some performance issues, sometimes it chugs a little bit, we're at that level where it's so good-looking at that point. Like, I don't know if you remember, I was always saying that with the PS2, Xbox, and GameCube era, the graphics weren't the best they could be, but they were at that point where I was happy with them.
Yep.
On a personal level. From someone who follows the industry and someone who demands the best, I wasn't happy with them. But for me, my own purpose is sitting in my room playing a GameCube game, playing an Xbox game. Looks fine.
But that's the difference.
But like, it is a difference. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that this next leap, the ones that the 360 and the PS3 have made, and games like Crysis, are at that level where people who demand the best are seeing photorealistic games at this point. So anything past this, you know, it may make it look a lot better, but I think, again, to put it simply, it's diminishing returns. How much more real can you get than real? You know?
More real.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So it's going to get better from a performance standpoint. You're going to be able to have realistic stuff with even more people on screen, and that's cool. What I'm saying is from a quality standpoint, when integrated graphics get to that point where they can mimic an Xbox 360 and not cost you $500 for an add-on card, and that day will come, they need to jump up on that, and they need to implement it, and they need to pimp that out and say, hey, look, now you can buy a computer for $500 that not only burns CDs, burns DVDs, does your porn for you, does your taxes, does Excel,
porn.
You can work from home on it, you can watch stuff on it, you can, you know, download music from it, you can make videos for YouTube and, like, you know, put your video blog up there about how you're a nerd and whatever. It also plays games as well as your console, and it makes it look better because it's a PC, and you can upgrade it if you so choose to. So that's what I'm hoping for it to come out of this. I don't know if they see that, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole thing about games being playable from your web browser, which is amazing, and I can't wait to see that come out off of beta, you know. So I don't know. I think PC gaming is in trouble, but mostly from people who don't want to learn about the truth. Once people start publicizing what's really going on, then I don't think there's going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I hope, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, while WoW to me is a problem from the standpoint that no one's playing anything else, at the very least, it'll have that revenue coming into the industry for the while, so that maybe Blizzard can make the first breakthrough game that can play on any system that's single and multiplayer, that's not WoW, that's not subscription-based, and that kicks ass. StarCraft 2.
Right.
Mm-hmm, I was going to say that.
Yeah, we'll see.
Waiting for Diablo 3.
I kind of want to see that, too. As much as I disliked 1 and 2, I have a soft spot for giving it another shot, and I'm interested in that. And I'm a little interested in Titan Quest now too, especially because the company went under, and I feel bad for them.
Okay.
But any other questions? Any other things, or should we move on to this other interesting tidbit about reviewing and shit?
Let us do that, and let us be swift.
Swift. All right. So I think this is going to be a topic of sorts, but we already made a bunch of topics out of our news already, so we're just going to talk about this like anything else.
Yeah.
Publishers basing royalties off of Metacritic scores. This is not news, really, because I remember this coming out years ago, but I think this is a new take on the situation. Steven Totillo, MTV Multiplayer, continues his week-long look at video game review practices by exploring the practice of game publishers withholding certain bonuses and or royalties if the game doesn't achieve a certain Metacritic average. Basically, a publisher agrees to finance the development of a game. Oh, let me speak haughtily. Basically, a publisher agrees to finance the development of a game as long as developer in these sort of situation agrees to Metacritic score limit stipulations that could theoretically see a low scoring game that sells millions
like a children's licensed video game
hardly earning the devs a dime. Totillo talked to some pretty big names about the practice, including GameSpot's former Jeff Gerstmann, who explains why the practice is so disturbing, even though it really shouldn't require an explanation. Anyone who hears this should know that this is fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I've gotten emails from developers over the years who have said, I don't think you realize what you're doing to me with this review, because my review knocked them out of the range of some bonus that they were up for. It's a really ridiculous practice that almost always works in the publisher's favor. Luckily, it isn't as widespread as it once was, but it does give you interesting insight into why some developers will defend their games as if their lives depended on it. Sometimes they might. And I want to go to Alex Navarro's blog, the head of Alfredo Garcia, who a while back when I was still writing for him, when he was still with GameSpot, he showed me this email, this ridiculous email, and he's made it public now on his blog. Let's see. The post is called, let's see, wow, it's down there. It's basically something similar. You can click on he's categorized it as an email store. So you can just click on emails in his category, and it's called, Oh Lord, What Hell Hath I Wrought? It says, let me read this. I guess you could also call this I Get Awesome Emails Volume 2. Basically, here's what happened. He reviewed Cooking Mama. Was it Cooking Mama? Yeah, mm-hmm. It was Cooking Mama 2 for DS or Wii, one of those two.
DS, I think.
And let's see. He got an email from Majesco that said, with the first Cooking Mama DS reaching 1 million units in Europe and near 1 million stateside, I began to worry that this might begin to go to our heads. Majesco's parking lot would be flooded with Bentleys, Maybachs, and rare hybrid cars that run on pure ego. That's a quote from an email. Here's the entire email. Hey, Alex, I would like to thank you for your review of Cooking Mama 2 for the DS. It was fair and balanced and seemed to come from a special place in your heart. By the way, Alex gave the game a 6.0. I would like to thank you for your blunt honesty in telling people that this game is, quote, not worth their while, end quote, and that they could, quote, safely leave this one alone, end quote. With the first Cooking Mama DS reaching 1 million units in Europe and a near million stateside, I began to wonder this might go to our heads. Majesco's parking lot would be filled with Bentleys, Maybachs, and rare hybrid cars that run on pure ego. This is no longer my fear. So I tip my cap to you, good sir, for keeping us grounded. God knows we are all, indeed, all financially well off and not a bunch of hardworking people just trying to pay our bills. I got some fucking news for you, buddy. Alex is trying to pay his fucking bills, too. Okay? That's his job. Mm-hmm. Your job is to make a game that's good. His job is to tell you if your game wasn't good. Effort goes so far. You get an A for effort, but if it's not good, it's not good. I don't know what they expect. That's bullshit. But then here's this other thing that Al found. It's called Quality Control. More on faking quality and Metacritic.
Mm-hmm.
This is on the same day as on Thursday. You wanna read the intro to this and then I'll read the quotes?
Sure, I could do that.
Sure.
More on faking quality and Metacritic. Written by
terrible, awful.
Written by Alexander. This is my Jesse Jackson. Whenever we hear about the travails of a video game company, snark abounds, and ultimately, the course cries, why don't you just make some games that don't suck?
Praise the Lord!
You go, Jesse!
Easy to say from the outside looking in, but independent game developer Matthew of the Wasteland blog shared his insider experience with an unidentified major publisher to explain that it's not always so simple. It's not so easy, even when your only friend. Anyway, even when Jimi Hendrix song. Executives talk the talk about quality control. Matthew's.
Do they walk the walk?
And they walk the walk. Nope, they don't. They just talk the talk. They have mouths, but they cannot. Anyway, Matthew cited the institution of bonuses for developers based on Metacritic scores, similar to the practice of hinging developer royalties on good scores that MTV multiplayer star Stephen Totilo recently investigated. Said Matthew.
Jesus Matthew Christ. Says, armed with the knowledge that higher review scores meant more money for them, game producers were thus encouraged to identify the elements that reviewers seemed to notice and most like. Detailed graphics, scripted set-piece battles, robust online multiplayer, player choice, and more of everything. Like a food company performing a taste test to find out that people basically like the saltiest, greasiest variation of anything and adjusting its product lineup accordingly, the big publishers struggled to stuff as much of those key elements as possible into every game they funded.
Comment.
Yes, comment.
They want to become McDonald's of video games.
The result, said Matthew, was that the development became rushed and disjointed, all in the pursuit of the mighty Metacritic review score.
Score. Multiplayer modes were suddenly tacked on late in development, Metroid Prime 2. More missions and weapons were added to bulk up their offering to be created by outsourced partners. Level-based games suddenly turned into open-world games. Before you cry in despair, keep in mind that all these people wanted in the end was the best game possible, or more precisely, the best reviewed game possible.
Matthew's entire story.
Better close that McDonald's down.
I really just think that when you make a truly good game, they will know it. Because you try to stuff all these things in, it's going to easily pop out. If you stuff all these things in, and you take your time, and you make sure that it's the best that it can be, even with all the stuff in there, then you've got no problem. You don't need to rush it out for. Well, maybe you do, but you shouldn't need to rush it out for a holiday release.
Well, not only that, outsourcing a creative team's ideas. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, you don't expect fucking problems with that.
It's just, I don't know. It's hard, you know, especially with the outsourcing thing. It's so hard to be able to meet a timeline. And a level of quality within budget and within demand without using outsourcing these days. And it's a sad thing. It's a fucking sad thing. You know, take it from me, okay? But it's often the best way. Now, the problem I have with like you said, is the creativity part. If you want to have the designers design as much as they can from the, you know, and put the framework together so that, you know, all the ideas come from them, that's great. Let the outsourcers take that spec sheet, design the engine to take that into account, and do all the menial stuff, because that's what they're there for. It's basically cheap labor. Mm-hmm. Cheap intelligence, basically.
Yeah, I know, but it's an intelligence that may not adhere to the original principles
game. That's why I'm saying that when you outsource it, you have to do it smartly. You have to make them do the things that are rote, the things that are repetitive, the things that are modular. Not modular, but like the things that are basically very just kind of mundane, and then you leave the real design to the creative people. And if that means that you have to push back that game, push it the hell back.
I mean, I want to talk theoretically here because not me. I'm talking about their theory.
Right.
They're putting together a recipe to build a very good reviewed game.
Right.
Okay, or a fairly good reviewed game, or a great reviewed game. This is the recipe that they're giving, and why are they following that? I mean, the basic principle here is to make sure that your team knows their shit, knows what their ideas are, focus on that, make sure that it comes out in a timely fashion, okay? And from there on, you know, whatever happens, happens. I mean, like, putting in these recipes, tacking on things is exactly what it is. It's tacking on. It's going to look tacked on. Okay? Nobody likes that. You cannot put a recipe at the last minute. I mean, you just cannot. If you have a game that looks good, plays well, all the mechanics are succinct, you know, the whatever is going on, it was planned to go on, the story flows, you know, there's no need for like real voice actors that you had to spend time coaching them on and stuff like that. You know, you had people who got the shit down right away. You know, all these different things. You get all that down in a timely fashion.
Right.
You put out a good game. That's what you need to concentrate on, and not the recipe.
The recipe, right. And what bugs me about this whole recipe is that it's you know, when people, you know, a lot of people can't see the forest for the trees. This recipe type of thing is not, they're not seeing the trees for the forest. They're taking a look at the big picture and saying, okay, big picture, this is what this game needs to do. But then they don't look at the little things like, okay, QA, quality assurance. Does this control well? Are there bugs here, Kanan Lynch? Okay. like, we have this, that, this, and this in our game, but does it mesh well together? Does it fit? Does it make sense? Kanan Lynch, say the word fuck every other time in this game. Do we really need to have that? Okay? We put that in there to make it mature, but did we do it the right way? Did we balance
Not only that, I mean, is it necessary to make it authentic?
Right.
You know? I mean, are you trying to look authentic? And if you are, you're trying too hard, because people will read into that shit. I mean, that's the whole thing. The recipe doesn't work. It doesn't work. You have to build games the way the way anything's supposed to be built. You got a time frame. You've got a plan. You've got the story. What can you do to get this in on a specific time frame? And if you can't do it, don't do it.
Push it back.
Plain and simple. You know, push it back. Put it on the back burner. Do something. Because a game like this, look at Two Human. Have we played this game yet?
Nope.
when you play this game, is it going to be amazing? It should be.
I hope so. It's looking good.
It should be. Okay. Yeah. How many years have we been waiting for that?
Like 8 to 10.
A lot, yeah.
Oh, exactly. By the way, Tony, if this entices you at any little bit, I don't know if you're interested in Two Human before, but people were saying that it's like it's very similar in spirit to Diablo.
I read up on it. I'm very interested in getting this game.
You'll have that. You have a Diablo for your 360.
Supposedly, it's coming out in July or did
August. It's August. It's officially for August.
No.
It'll be a birthday gift. It'll be a gift.
Okay.
But yeah, right, I mean,
so,
you just,
I mean,
you,
but that's
ahead.
The thing.
Yeah,
that's the thing. They have a time frame. They couldn't meet it. They know this game is going to be awesome. Okay. They know they have a product here that is just going to blow people away. And I, quite frankly, I think it might. I really think it might just blow everybody away. This will be like the surprise hit, another BioShock. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, the whole thing.
And I actually got to be honest here. Like, even if it ends up being a disappointment in the sense that it's not anything revolutionary, all I want to do is play it. You know, I hate listening to hype and stuff like it. I don't care if a game, if this game is like hyped up, if games get hyped up to be so fantastically great, and the very most I get out of it is a good time.
Right.
That's fine.
As long as you enjoyed yourself. Fine.
As long as I enjoyed myself, all I want is for this game to not be delayed to the point where there's so much hype and then it's bad. As long as the game is enjoyable, that's all I want out of it. I don't care if it's that late. You know, I'll deal with it. You know, for Twilight Princess, I was ready to be like, okay, well, this will be a fun game. It'll be just like any other Zelda. But it did it better than any other game, and I happen to just like it a lot. You know, but, you know, game is delayed, you know. Just make it good. And I don't think that jamming stuff in there, like you said, with the recipe is the way to do it, you know. It's like...
It's not.
It's basically...
Because it's going to look contrite. It's going to look like fluff. And nobody's going to, you know, really identify with the product you just put out. And that's the thing. You want them to identify with it. You want them to play it. You want them to interact with it. You want them to realize that they're playing something, maybe not revolutionary, but fun.
And
not a
and
recipe.
Something that, like a labor of love. Not a labor
of love. Yes. Exactly. Not a recipe. You don't want to have them, you know, playing, you know, American Idol and fucking, you know, pop singer and shit. You know, it's same premise. Okay. Okay. So we'll put out this thing, which is based on this thing because that thing worked. No.
Yeah. I'm gonna pull something out of my hat here for Al's sake. The fireballs in Vex. The fireballs in Vex?
I think he fell asleep.
Oh, no, I thought you said the fireballs in Vex. I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Aren't there fireballs or projectiles or something in Vex?
Let's not talk about that.
Exactly. But, yeah, I think, is there anything else on this, or should we wrap up? Because we don't have a mailbag today. No one wrote in, because they're all assholes.
Really?
Oh, my God.
That's a shame.
Those goddamn fireballs. The game was fine, and then they decided to give him some superpower, so he fucking shoots sparks. What the fuck? Oh, my God. I mean,
wait, you have to explain this to me. Since we have no mailbag, we have time for this.
All right.
Vex. Explain the history of that for Tony.
All right. Vex is just a quick history of what the game is, even though I've talked about it countless times. It's a platform like Mario World, not Mario World, Mario 64, where...
I remember this, yeah.
You basically
go
from place to place, and the whole goal was basically you avenging your grandfather or something like that, because this alien being came to your planet and enslaved all your people and shit. And he, like, killed your grandfather because he was beating on him. And stopped one of the guards from trying to beat on him. And then he, like, shot some fireball at your father. At you. And your grandfather pushed you away, got killed, whatnot. And then you wanted to sneak around and try and kill him. And you found some treasure which had these claws. The claws came out and it's absorbed him with this power of these claws. So basically, he's this guy that's just on a string of vengeance against this guy. And his only weapon is these claws. He can climb shit. He can slash the shit out of people like Wolverine. Like, he looks kind of like Wolverine, too. And, you know, that used to be the extent of his power. And you would go through the entire game, and all you would have is these claws. And you can do stuff with them, but it was just claws. The game was almost done. Wait, the game...
Cat against a gun. Yeah.
The game was almost done. And everybody tested the shit out of that game, and then a new version comes out, and the motherfucker could shoot fireballs. You get these orbs and stuff, and then we had enough orbs, you would just, like, go into overdrive mode, and then you'd be shooting fireballs from your claws. Just like, where the hell did this come from? You know, it was perfectly fine when all he had was claws. And, I mean, it was okay. It wasn't, like, the best game ever, but it was okay.
Right.
And now, all of a sudden, his ass is shooting fireballs and going nuts and, like, doing fucking Genki Dama spirit balls like fucking Goku. And it's like, come on.
Adioken!
Yeah, I mean, I understand it's a fantasy world and all, and it is, you know, it could certainly be possible that he could shoot fireballs from gloves that have absolutely no kind of fire ability, but
why shoehorn it in at, like, the end?
Yeah, it's like, now we gotta go through a whole new realm of testing. I mean, I'm not even gonna go into the fact that they added an intro to the game. Like, at first it started out, and it was like, okay, you got the video, and the video told you how he got the claws and everything, and you started in the first world. And that was it. And then they would teach you how to do things in the first world. They decided that wasn't enough. They decided to give you a dream world to teach you how to do everything in the game before you went into the first world. And then they told you how to play the game again. It was like, come on.
Oh, tutorial. Yeah.
It's fucking stupid.
Did you have to do extra testing and, like, rebalancing of the levels after you added the fireballs in because they changed the way that the game is played?
No, we just tested to make sure it worked. We didn't give a fuck about balance.
So there you go.
You know what? Because they did all that already.
There's another thing. You know, you add something in. How does that affect the balance of the game?
Right. And I mean, the game was really hard anyway. But, you know, it was stupid because you couldn't even... Wait, do you? I don't think you were able to even use the fireballs on the last boss because you didn't have the resources to actually get that power. Like, the enemies from the last boss level didn't give you the necessary reagents for... the fireball power.
Fireballs and shit.
But it was like, okay, it didn't really affect that part of the game, but, like, at the end of the game where shit was just real difficult, all the platforming and whatnot, which, oh man, I just got memories of, like, the last level. The last level was the biggest pain in the ass. I don't even think you even used the fireball part there because it was just so much tricky platforming and several enemies, but they were, like, really hard enemies, few and far in between. It was mostly like platforming, so you didn't really use the power. It was like the first three stages you would use the power in. I should find that game. Find it for fucking
now,
Xbox.
My question is
6.3 fair. Vex feels outdated right out of the gate.
Oh yeah.
My question is when they added that on, did that seem tacked on?
Yes. Because it was now, like all of a sudden one day he just all of a sudden got the power to shoot fireballs. Like he reached the final level.
Okay, now aside from that question, did it enhance the game any bit other than what you played?
No. No.
Then what's the fucking point?
There was no point. That's why we were all like, what the fuck is this? Because you could easily take care. I mean, they had like combos and shit. Like, it was cool just like dispatching enemies, groups of enemies with the claws, and it were like little combo attacks and right. things like that. But then it was like, okay, there's nothing that's that hard for you to have to run around shooting fireballs with super speed and all this shit. It just didn't make right. any sense. It wasn't like, oh my god, I'm having trouble. I'm gonna need to do this ultimate attack so I can get rid of all these guys. Like in God of War, when you are in trouble, you use the rage of the gods and you start whooping everybody's ass and shit. That is a necessity mm-hmm. sometimes. I mean, like for example, I had to use it in the stage of God of War when the wall is coming in towards you, and if you don't kill all the guys in time, it just crushes you.
Yeah. Right? Oh, I hate that part. Yeah.
That part, I was like, okay.
What did
I'm
I use? I think I used
this.
The lance. Yeah.
Yeah.
That lance came in handy.
So
No, God of War. God that of War didn't 1. Have a lance. God of War 1. What the fuck did I use? I used something that would it worked and
you probably used
there.
The rage the of
sword.
Gods.
The big sword.
Or the big sword.
Oh,
the Phoenix Blade or something. The big sword, I guess. I don't know.
Because I used Rage of the Gods and I did the spinning attack, and that would just knock the shit
out of
me. Oh,
that's it. That's it. Yes. That's it.
God damn it. I want to play that game again, and I've already finished it.
Yeah, me too. God damn it.
Hey, guess what?
Damn it, Al.
Guess what?
Damn it, Al.
I'm getting the God of War PSP next week on Tuesday. Ha ha ha. Red PSP.
I still need to get that game.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, man.
Damn. Look at us. What the fuck happened to us? No, actually, what happened to me? Because you guys are playing games. I'm playing fucking Phantasy Star. What the fuck is going on with me?
Well, you may be able to play Phantasy Star 3 again. But right now, I gotta go
through Zelda. Yeah, what the fuck?
You make me want to start Phantasy Star 2 on GameTap.
Oh my goodness, that game.
I've had this GameTap account for months, and I haven't been utilizing it. There's so many good games on there that I should just utilize it for.
Yeah.
I haven't been yet.
You know, I should get it just because it has Psychonauts.
Yeah. I mean, you don't have Xbox Live yet, do you?
No. I've been very, very preoccupied. So,
yeah, because if you wanted to just get a Psychonauts in $15, it's on Xbox Originals. And that way you don't even have to have a GameTap subscription, even though I think Psychonauts is still free on GameTap right now. I think it's free till December.
It's free, yeah.
So if you till December. So you can, if you wanted to go through it and not have to pay for it, you could just download GameTap and set up an account, and you'd be able to play Psychonauts.
Now, can I do this on my loaner?
I don't know.
It depends on how well built your PC is. I don't know.
Well built my PC.
Psychonauts. No, I'm talking about the system specs, because Psychonauts isn't that forgiving. I mean, I'm sure you can scale it down and it'll be fine, but like it's still. Requires a little bit of power, you know, not insane amount, but just, you know, more than.
Yeah, that's why I never got GameTap, because I still have the loan.
Yeah,
Ethan, if you're out there, give my computer back.
He still hasn't been able to figure. Damn, I feel bad for both of you. But I think
like that, it's gonna be a year.
I think if you get onto GameTap with this PC, you'll still be able to play some classic things that you like. So it might. Mm-hmm. I mean, it still might have some stuff for you. But
yeah, you know. I think so. Yeah.
Score one for GameTap.
I need to play Simon's. Yeah, I need to play Simon's Quest again. Yeah. Love that music.
Oh, what a terrible night to have a curse.
That's how I talk.
Worst voice acting ever.
It's like Tony. It's like Phoenix Wright when everyone talks.
Oh God! No, the best is like Metal Gear. No, the best is Metal Gear. Their lips move to the. You know, it's like why are your lips? Oh no, Bionic Commando.
Oh yeah, that was
yeah. Bionic Commando. Why are your lips moving? Why? Why are you talking that language?
Get out of
I don't
here,
know
you
that
nerd.
Language. And every word sounds the same.
Damn you!
How did I discern that? What the fuck? Damn you!
I think we've run our course here. We've obviously descended into madness. So
there's no madness. It's just.
Let's. Do some housekeeping. Do some
what is that? Go 13.
Shut up! I want to do some housekeeping. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Episode 94 obviously was really, really delayed, but if you didn't notice it, as soon as you see this episode, that episode should already be up there, so 94 should be right under this one. I haven't had time to post the People's Review yet. This week was kind of weird and crazy, so I'll try to review put the reviews up this week. Go to drfishypants.com. That is our contributor. Ryan Fishman, he has a blog. Doctor is spelled out the word doctor, so drfishypants.com. Go to gameslaves.net. Help them figure out a new identity. They're trying to toy with new ideas. Give Pete an email, Charlie an email, give him a shout. That's gameslaves.net, and you can listen to their podcast. We were on episode 50 of the said podcast. You can find them on iTunes, Game Slaves Radio. Listen to Al play guitar on, what is it?
XLM2K.blogspot.com.
Yay. Am I missing anybody? If I missed you, sorry. I forgot. Oh, yeah, that's right. Slunks works for TalkXbox.com. Mm-hmm. So, there's Tony. Hi. Let's see. What else? I think that's it. I think that's it. So, for brrr, Tony.
Brrr, 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 brrr.
For brrr, Al.
Brrr, 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 brrr. Objection.
Yeah, I can't even do that. This has been your host, Mr. Chupon.
What are you doing? Me what? What are me what?
This is the host, Mr. Chupon. Good girls gotta get down with the gangsters. Go ahead, girl, put some back and some makeup on it. While I stand up in the background and check up on it.
No, that was Chewbacca. I'm sorry.
We've lost our purpose.
But in my car, I'm living on a star.
Sounds like a gargling Listerine.
End it! I'm living on a star.